I declare the meeting open at 5:33 PM. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we're meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should you have any questions or queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the council business team after the meeting. I request that all mobile phones be turned to silent for the duration of the meeting. The agenda comprises 11 reports from management and one item of general business, and no apologies have been received. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision based on fewer than six members voting in favour of it, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by a committee, please disclose the type and nature of your interest prior to consideration of the item. I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 32 held on Tuesday the 17th of April. Councillor Riley, is that seconded? Councillor Oak, I put that to the vote. All those in favour? I declare that carried unanimously. I ask councillors whether there are any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting. No. The following submissions have been received in accordance with the council's meeting procedures code. In relation to agenda item 6.1, Epsom Road, Kensington, 9 to 11, request to speak from Cal Twite, Nicole Robinson, Kate McNeil, Mark Chudley, Anthony Bailey, Mena Mikhail, Dina Shihata, Jimmy Marokos, Fadi Malek, Wes Malek, Pauline Megalala, Claire Mitchell, and items of correspondence from Gary Walsh, Ben Dixon Ward, Kate McNeil, Anthony Bailey, and Anthony Duckworth. In relation to item 6.2, planning scheme amendments, C271 Guildford and Hardware Laneways Heritage, request to speak from Tanya Tisha and Tristan Davies. Items of correspondence from Rowan Story, Melbourne Heritage Action, Elizabeth Grasso, Simon Martin and Adrian Pozzo. In relation to agenda item 6.5, the draft Waste and Resource Recovery Strategy 2030, request to speak from Artemis Patchy, the South Bank Residents Association, and items of correspondence from the same. In relation to agenda item 6.6, proposed travel by Councillor Jackie Watts, the ICF Global Summit, London, June 2018, a request to speak from Chris Thrum, and an item of correspondence also from Chris Thrum. In relation to agenda item 6.8, City of Melbourne Reconciliation Action Plan 2018-20, a request to speak from Chris Thrum, and an item of correspondence from Chris Thrum. And I ask members of the public if there's anyone who requested to speak whose name I haven't read out in relation to a particular agenda item. Is there anyone who wants to speak on an item but hasn't been listed? No? Thank you very much. I advise submitters that you'll be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. You'll have 3 minutes to address the committee. It is the intention of the committee to adhere to this 3-minute time limit, and to assist you, please refer to the counter on the wall behind me. Beeps will sound at the completion of 2 minutes signalling. You have 1 minute remaining to conclude your address, and another beep will sound to signal the time allocated to you has finished. In accordance with Council's Meeting Procedures Code, a 15-minute period will be provided at the beginning and end of this meeting for members of the public to ask questions. Questions shouldn't be greater than 90 seconds in duration, and I remind members of the public that this isn't a time to make submissions. Submitters will be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. I now invite questions from members of the public. Just put your
Acting
hand.
Lord Mayor, just before we start, can I raise a procedural issue?
You can.
So that we have people here not sitting through public questions, and because we can I suggest that we do the procedural motion now to defer agenda items 6.7, 6.8 and 6.9 to the next future Melbourne Committee meeting. Those are the Community Funding Strategy Review, the Aboriginal Melbourne Action Plan and the Reconciliation Action Plan, and also reorder the agenda items. Just if we do that now, it lets those in the audience who were going to stay go a little bit earlier. I now move that motion.
I'm happy to second that. I put that to the vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. I now go to questions from the audience. If you have a question, just raise your hand. Tony Penner, please take the lectern. You've got 90 seconds.
Tony Penner, South Bank Residents Association. This is in continuation to a question I asked about a month ago regarding the council's assurance that the recycling would continue to be collected in light of what was happening in China, of which council assured us that their contract was pretty tight with the collections, which is great. But what I would like an assurance is that the recycling that has and will continue to be collected under that contract will actually be recycled, and that it won't end up in landfill like what is happening, or like what we're hearing about is happening in other councils throughout Australia, where they can't actually recycle their recycling.
Tony, thanks for the question. You're right that at this stage our contractor SKM informs us that there isn't an issue. Obviously some regional councils are experiencing issues. We've got a council, unfortunately, in Ipswich that's deciding that they're not going to collect recycling. We're certainly nowhere near that, and I'd encourage anyone who's in the audience to continue to recycle, because that separation of the source material is extremely important. The biggest waste stream in the city of Melbourne is actually building industrial waste, and up to 95% of that is actually recycled under commercial contracts, so we believe that that won't be affected. Interestingly enough, the portion of waste that is impacted by the China decision is large in terms of volume, but overall, in terms of percentage terms, is actually quite a small number. But what it does do, and I think this is where you're heading, is it rightly gives us the opportunity to really get a good domestic waste and resource recovery scheme going in Victoria, but also nationally. So COAG ministers are meeting on this very issue. I think they've got a way to go before they have a plan with targets and budgets attached to it. The state government has stepped in with some emergency funding, particularly for those regional councils that are under pressure. But you have our assurance that one of the items we'll consider tonight is absolutely about ensuring that we have that domestic waste and resource recovery industry thriving. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Shane Scanlon.
Yeah, thank you. Shane Scanlon, CBD News. My question is also a bit of a recap on something I asked here a month ago, and that is what attempts is the council making towards getting a response from former Lord Mayor Robert Doyle to as yet unanswered allegations?
Thanks, Shane. I'll ask our CEO to update on the investigation.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. What I can say is that we are continuing to make very active efforts to ascertain whether or not the former Lord Mayor is in a position to respond to complaints that have been made about his behaviour. And those attempts are frequent and ongoing. And when I'm in a position to provide further information about the response to those matters to council and through council to the community, I will do so.
Can I ask a supplementary question? Does that include a ultimatum such as that given by the Department of Health?
CEO.
Through you, Acting Lord Mayor, I'm not going to ventilate our legal tactics in an open forum. Sorry, Shane.
Thank you.
Thanks, Shane. Any other questions? No? Thank you very much, everyone. I call on Councillor Leppett to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the planning heritage portfolio.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. There are three reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio, and I will be chairing the first, which is Agenda Item 6.2, Planning Scheme Amendment C271, Guildford and Hardware Laneways Heritage. Would councillors like a presentation?
Excuse me for interrupting. I'm just not sure you gentlemen can see so many people waiting to sit down, right?
Yeah, I can, Councillor, and we're doing the best we can in terms of seating, but there's only a limited capacity to the room, so we'll let our officers continue to work through that. Thank you.
We'll continue. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No. I call on Tanya Tesher, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. Tanya, you have up to 3 minutes. Thank you very much.
I'm the owner of number 25 to 29 Sutherland Street, which is the entrance to Guildford Lane, and is also a building which my father purchased in 1963 and has remained in the family for 54 years. It has not changed. It is the Guildford Lane area is subject to a height limit of seven stories, and I don't think anyone realises this. There are currently two new buildings in the street. There's a plan which has been approved for two other new buildings, so it is not a total heritage area. The building next to mine is also a housing commission type building which was built about 20 years ago. It is also not heritage, but everything that has been built in that area has been built in character to fit into the whole area. I do not think that councillors realise what heritage means to the owners of property. It means that you have very, very limited prospects of things that you can do with your own property. We're already limited to seven stories. I've got an old building which needs various remedies, and these are old buildings. They're not new buildings that can be refurbished or done anything easily. In fact, I've got issues with the basement that nobody can really actually come up with a solution. And if I'm to be having heritage listing, heritage overlay on it as a contributory heritage listing, it means that I'm very, very limited with what I can do with the building. And these buildings, everyone who's got buildings in that area like the area, but they don't necessarily want to have a heritage overlay. And I think you people need to understand what it means to the owners of buildings to put something like that on it. Just to give you an instance of this, if you have a 90-year-old person who owns a heritage building, they will not be able to, they won't have the funds or the resources to do anything with it. We're in the city. I've got a street where there are 40, 50 story towers next, opposite mine and next to mine, and you're asking me to have a heritage overlay over my building, which will be extremely restrictive on me and will cost me a fortune. At the moment, I've got very high rates and very high land tax, and I don't think that's fair to all the people in the street to be adding to their worries.
Thank you. I can assure you that councillors understand the height controls in the area. Are there any questions now? I propose to respond in the debate otherwise. No? Thank you very much. You may take a seat. I don't believe Tristan Davies is here. Is that correct? That is correct. And I don't believe we had any other submitters, including that late one from Urbis. No? Great. We will move into the debate now. I'm going to move the motion as it appears on the screen, and I call on a councillor to second the motion. Thank you, Councillor Rees. So we've gone out for exhibition on this planning scheme amendment, an extended period of time after quite a robust heritage review by our consultants, Lovell Chen. So this isn't the first time that the matter's come before this committee, and it is great to have seen so many submissions made through that exhibition process, in particular, the balance between property owners who are supportive, property owners who are opposed, but also the large number of general comments that are supportive. It is great to see so many submissions that have covered the full range of issues that this planning scheme amendment raises. As our submitter here tonight has referred to, this is a special area of the city. There are existing height controls for much of the area, which has contributed to the retention of the Guildford and Hardware Lane general area as a special character area, a default special character area, if you like. It's meant that the sorts of development pressures here are different to what you see in blocks further over. However, heritage overlays, I don't believe, do what the submitter has suggested that they do do. For example, the subject site in question is proposed to be graded contributory rather than significant. It means that development of the site is often anticipated, and the retention of the front part of the building and a significant proportion of the front rooms of that building would generally be required to be retained. But the change from the current building controls to the proposed new controls, I suspect, aren't as quite as material as has been made out here. But the overarching point is that the heritage controls in this area are not as adequate as they need to be to continue to anticipate the increased development pressures in this area. The City of Melbourne is growing incredibly quickly, and the CBD is growing second fastest after Docklands, if you like to put it that way. And the City of Melbourne has made a strong commitment to ensure that our heritage controls, which by and large across the Hoddle grid, including this area, are now more than 30 years out of date, are up to date, so that as we do develop the city, the community's expectations about what is and isn't valued inside the Hoddle grid is being respected by government. That's what this process does. The next step is an independent planning panel, well, appointed by the minister. They will hear all of these arguments that have been put forward during the exhibition. Here is not the time to turn this committee into a quasi-jury and hear the hardship arguments on either side. That panel will hear all of those submissions at length, and there is a very, very fair process to go through there where all arguments can be heard. That is the appropriate place to continue to prosecute the submissions like the one put before us today. And I'll just note one other submission that came through today. There was a request for a late submission after the exhibition to be considered and referred to the committee. My advice to anyone in that position is that the precedent of doing so is not something that we can or should entertain, just like objections to planning applications. VCAT isn't always particularly keen to hear that a council hasn't considered an objection properly in that matter. There's also the case here with the planning scheme. If we're receiving submissions after the exhibition deadline, what is the status of that submission? So as always, I would encourage anyone in that basket to obtain their own legal advice. If they wish to, they can seek standing at panel, but it's not up to the committee at this stage to make special provisions for anyone seeking them at this stage. So that would be my advice from here. Again, the next stage is planning panel, and I very, very much look forward to seeing what that panel report comes up with. We are one step closer to modernising and bringing up to date the very out-of-date heritage controls in the Guildford Hardware Lane area. Councillor Rees.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Thank you for that excellent summation. I'll be very brief. Look, we all know that the City of Melbourne is under huge development pressure at the moment, and that's why the Council is stepping up its effort to protect heritage places, and Guildford and Hardware Lane's precinct are a very special heritage places in this city indeed. We don't take these steps lightly. There has been a huge, huge amount of work done to get to this evening, measured, I was going to say hundreds, but if not thousands of hours invested from City of Melbourne officers and very well-respected consultants like Lovell Chen. So I am very comfortable with the recommendation on the screen and very happy to support it.
Thank you, Councillor Rees. Any other councillors wish to make a contribution? Councillor Oak.
Only briefly saying I also acknowledge the significant amount of work that goes into this, not only obviously from our officers and the consultants involved in understanding all of the properties, but also the residents and the community who not only own or live in the buildings, but also walk past and love the heritage in our city. We've done significant work. There's still a lot more to do, but the systematic step-by-step approach that we're doing too, as Councillor Leppert said, and who is, you know, the champion of all of this work, you know, systematically updating our heritage controls and protection in the municipality. It's so important, but I acknowledge that it is a lot of work, and we've still got one more step, and I too look forward to the assessment from the independent panel and see where we land for this really very important corner of the city.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Any other councillors wish to contribute? Councillor Watts.
Just to say, we have to recognise this is very complex work, and I encourage those who have issue with it to take the very good advice of Councillor Leppert in putting their case in the most effective forum. And these are difficult issues. I wish you well.
Councillor Lilo.
Similar as well, and I think you know, there isn't another process after this, and you know, hearing the speaker you know, arguing about her plight, I just wish you all the best, because I think it is sometimes in there needs to be a balanced argument. I think, you know, the amount of work that we the senior realm have done is tremendous. I don't appreciate the heritage involved, but at the same time, there are many times where I've heard from the property owners the restrictions that we've put on them. And so I just want to say all the best to you.
Any other council wish to contribute to the debate? I'll just quickly close and break all the rules by introducing some new material to the debate, but I'm the chair, what are you going to do? And that is to thank a third submitter. The longest and most detailed submission from Rowan Story suggested a series of potential improvements that have resulted in our officers suggesting to Level Chen that they do take a second look at some areas here. Those extra issues will be prosecuted at panel as well, and I particularly thank him for that very, very useful submission. I'll now put the motion to a vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare that carried unanimously. Thank you. I'll now hand over to Councillor Rees to chair the other two planning portfolio items.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. There are two remaining reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio. The first of those is agenda item 6.1, so we're moving back up the agenda now to planning permit application TP 2015-81 for 1-3579-11 Epsom Road, Kensington. I'm going to suggest that we do receive a presentation from officers on that matter. I know there are a lot of people here tonight who are interested in this matter, and it is something that council has spent a lot of time weighing up, so I think it's appropriate for us to receive a presentation from senior planner Evan Council. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and through you. As has been stated, this application relates to a large parcel of land located on Epsom Road. It's also an island site which is bound by a public laneway to the rear and the Ridgeway and Kensington Road, as shown on the screen there. The parcel is highlighted in red. The image on the screen here is an image of the church as it currently presents to the street from the corner of Epsom Road and Macaulay Road. This image is an image of the existing dwellings located along Epsom Road, which are proposed to be demolished as part of this application. This is an image of the rear laneway. The subject site is on the right of the screen, on the left of the screen, and the adjacent dwelling across the public laneway is on the right of the screen. This image is a proposed perspective image from the same corner with the proposed development shown along the right-hand side of the screen there. The plans show the general footprint of the proposed building. On the right-hand side of the screen there, you see the outline of the retained church, and on the left and central to the site, you can see the footprint of the proposed building at ground floor level. And the shot on the screen there at the moment is showing the second floor level. It is a two-storey building that's proposed. The landscaping plan that's proposed for the site is quite extensive, and you can see there is considerable planting along Epsom Road that's proposed as part of the application, as well as some planting along the ridgeway and some more minor planting along the existing laneway there at the rear of the site. The elevation on the screen shows what the proposal may look like from Epsom Road in pure elevation form. Difficult to get a perspective from that one, but nonetheless shows the height and extent of the new buildings on the site. This is an elevation from the rear of the site along the laneway. This is an elevation from the ridgeway as it would present to the street. And to finish, these are perspectives of the proposed building. The upper image shows a more meaningful representation of what the building will, how the building will present to the primary street front, with the internal forecourt separating two more proud built form envelopes which sit closer to the street edge there, and a perspective of the internal court and how that may present on the lower part of the screen. Happy to take any questions.
I don't think there are any questions. Are there any questions from councillors? I should ask the question. Councillor Watts.
Just that these images are from the developer, or are they our images? Sometimes there's a question around perspective and appropriate depiction.
Of course. All the plans and all the imagery of the proposed development has been provided as part of the application by the applicant. Yes.
Are there any other questions for Evan Council? No. Okay, thank you very much for that presentation. I now call on Kel Twight, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. Welcome to Town Hall, Kel. We'll remind you and other speakers that we have quite a number of speakers tonight, so we need to keep strictly to time. You have no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you, councillors. Thank you for the opportunity to say a few words here on behalf of the permit applicant. I'd like to start by thanking officers for their cooperation and constructive approach through the consideration assessment of this application. As summarised in the officer report, the application was lodged some time ago in February 2015 and proposed to demolish existing buildings, as it continues to be the case here, and develop a new building comprising meeting rooms, facilities, etc., to support the activities of the existing church. After that application as advertising, there was initial feedback from council and objections from the broader community. And the applicant essentially went back to the drawing board. It took those commentary quite seriously and engaged a completely new project team, including award-winning architects Make Architecture, to address the feedback that had been received. The applicant engaged with officers on a number of occasions during this redesign process, and this has resulted in an amended proposal that was subsequently the subject of re-advertising and put forward for consideration by this committee this evening. In our submission, it's a proposal that not only meets the needs of the church and the broader community, but is well integrated and designed with the existing church building, provides opportunities for activation along Epsom Road, provides increased car parking within basement levels that will assist in reducing parking impacts on the existing street network, manages its relationship with adjoining properties so as to not result in unreasonable amenity impacts, protects existing significant vegetation, particularly street trees, and meets the benchmark standards of environmental sustainable design. The proposal is of an architectural design excellence befitting of its location on this important intersection, and it provides a significant and important facility that will prove to be a net benefit to the community. In response to some of the key messages of concern by objectors, we submit that, or as summarising the officer report, the car parking access was initially proposed from Epsom Road, and that was opposed by council's traffic engineers and urban designers. Our client and his consultant team explored for other options, including the ridgeway and the rear lane, and the rear lane was considered to be the most appropriate, having regard to landscaping and pedestrian considerations. We note the application proposes to widen this laneway, allow passing area, and has support of both council and Cardinal, the consultant traffic engineers. With respect to concerns regarding the street interface, while the existing fences to be removed, the public realm, footpath, and the courtyard areas will be defined by landscape treatments. And as outlined in the officer report, the proposal doesn't result in any unreasonable impacts by way of overshadowing, overlooking, or bulk. Councillors, conditions recommended by officers ensure appropriate management of potential noise impacts. So in conclusion, councillors, we commend the officer report here before you. The applicant respectfully requests that the committee give consideration to the applicant's preparedness to work constructively with council and achieve a positive, high quality and balanced built form outcome on this site. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Right on time.
Any questions for Kel? No, I don't believe so. Thank you very much, Kel. I now call on Nicole Robinson with a gentle reminder from me to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Thanks very much, Nicole.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. As a resident, I'm speaking as a resident. This proposal is not an unexpected one. It comes at a time when the pressures of densification and resourcing are increasingly being tested in response to a growing urban populations. And I sat in the council meetings and heard some exciting numbers about around that. It also comes at a time when council must decide between rampant development and the measured preservation of quality of life that actually draws people to come here in the first instance, to choose to live within the bounds of this fine city. The fact that we find ourselves here tonight facing a form of mediation rather than a peaceful collaborative co-design process that would have better served us all is a sign of the significant community tension which underpins this proposal. There's a lot at stake in regards to how you proceed from here. I've lived in the Ridgeway for 14 years, and in that time we've seen significant changes to the neighbourhood, many of them good. One has been the increase in patronage to St Mary's Church. Contrary to some assertions that parishioners visit the church only 1 or 2 days a week, with numbers peaking at Easter and Christmas, I assure the council that this is not so. The truth is St Mary's visitors in numbers attend the church several days a week, Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays, in the day and often in the evenings for services, Bible study, classes, young people's activities, schooling, vespers, liturgy and other events, and often more than one day on the weekend. So we're talking a good percentage of the week. For the most part, this is actually great. It's a healthy, thriving, happy community, and it's lovely. I say this only to provide context for my concern, because parking and the extreme congestion in the Ridgeway, which is a narrow street, and the blocking of the laneway have all intensified to the point where these issues have created quite a deal of distress and friction amongst residents in the area. So it's a pressure cooker of congestion. This is not an issue just about on-street parking. It's also the traffic volume, car emissions that fill the lane and fill the air. It's blocking of the lane by cars and sometimes stubborn refusal to move. It has resulted in loud arguments, fights over illegal parking and the lane being blocked. In the narrow Ridgeway Street, which is a single lane, by the way, and the proposed widening doesn't actually allow for two cars, it's just for vegetation, as I understand, number one has actually been hit by cars in the past turning into the laneway. Cars attempt to enter from both ends of the laneway and then get stuck into their horns. And every weekend there's some sort of get out of the way, I was here first sort of conversations. All of this goes straight into the homes. I'm at number three, so I hear it directly, and disrupts our right to quiet enjoyment. So I have to hurry. I've got 12 seconds. In this phase of the project, I have one objection, and that is strongly opposing the car park entry and exit point being located in the laneway. It will make an impossible situation worse. I therefore ask applicants to amend their design and make the entry on either Kensington Road or the Ridgeway. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nicole. Well presented. I now call on Kate Sorry, Councillor Oak.
I'm just conscious that this question or this objection is one of the most significant ones around the issue about the how or if the car park will be used, because obviously in my mind I think the car park should reduce the parking off the surrounding streets, but I understand the concern. So on the points that Nicole has raised, is it Evan who could respond about the alternative access? Was that considered, and if not, why not? And also, what are the traffic management conditions to try to encourage the use of the car park, but also to mitigate the concern around One Ridgeway, please.
Thank you, Councillor, and through you, Chair. As the applicant stated, the car parking and traffic arrangements have been carefully considered through the application process and have changed considerably through the process. The applicant had an independent traffic report submitted with their application. They had that traffic engineer liaise directly with council's traffic engineers in trying to resolve the best possible solution for the site. The application now includes two levels of basement car parking, which is going to provide approximately 60 spaces on site. This will go a long way to relieving on-street parking pressures. The access was determined to be best located within the ridgeway. I note that along the rear laneway. I note that along that rear laneway, there is one property which has a roller door access, which we don't believe is currently being used for a car parking space, given the dimensions and location of a shed in the rear of that property. There is one other property which benefits from access to the rear laneway, and central within that laneway, opposite the proposal, is what is currently functioning as an open-air car park, which does benefit the church. We believe that having the access located adjacent to that open area and not directly adjacent to any residential dwellings is the best layout for the site, and that the ability for cars to enter and exit the site through that laneway is a much better arrangement than what's currently occurring on the site, where there's a largely informal parking area opposite the subject site, which is servicing that that existing use and not providing as much car parking for users of the site as what's going to be available as a result of the proposal.
Sure. Acting Lord Mayor.
Thank you. Thanks for that, Evan. And thank you, Councillor Oak, for asking that question, because it's a good one. Can you confirm for me how many properties have that rear... I think you said one has a roller door, but how many properties actually have rear lane access in that vicinity?
I'm recalling that there's actually no properties which have a vehicular access off that rear laneway, no residential properties opposite this site which have a vehicular access off that site. So at the moment, that rear laneway really services only the informal car parking area to the rear of what I think is number two, the Ridgeway. Number two, the Ridgeway, may have some access for a car. The other property which abuts does not have access for a car. It does have a roller door, but there's not sufficient space to get a car in and out of that roller door space. It may be used for a motorbike or other things.
Thank you.
Nick Francis Gilley.
Is it proposed that it will be one way? It looks like it. Will the laneway be only one way?
At present, Councillor, the laneway is two-way. As part of the proposal, the applicants also provided part of their land for the provision of space to allow cars to pass within the laneway, because the laneway is approximately 3.1 metres wide. It could become a one-way lane in the future. The way the applicants arranged it is so that cars accessing the underground car park will be approaching from one side and exiting from the other, logically, and the crossover entrance has been constructed or proposed in that way. And I would envisage that there's an operational management plan requirement within the permit. I'd envisage that that would also cover off information on how people would be provided with advice when coming to and from the premises, to make sure they're aware of those arrangements also.
All right. Thank you very much, Evan. Our next speaker is Mark Chudley. Mark, welcome to Town Hall. Welcome to the lectern. You are to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Well, thank you. I had a whole lot of notes, but I'm not even going to use them now after hearing that. Basically, I live at number 3 the Ridgeway, which is one of the houses you were talking about. I've been living there since 2004, which is 14 years, and I've seen the church grow in number and the pressures on the local community increase as Melbourne comes closer to Kensington. Now, the laneway which we're talking about is my issue, and the issue that most of the local residents have as well, and the entrance to the car park. Now, that laneway isn't just used by number 1 and number 3 for entrance to the house. The laneway is used all day long by the local community to get down to Kensington Road and back up to the Ridgeway. And it's a very narrow lane. So on drawings, everything looks great. But if you live in the area and you see the lane and you walk to the entrance of the lane and you look at the wooden power pole, there's big chunks out of the power pole where cars have hit it over many years. On the right-hand side, there's a steel bollard which has countless scuffs and paint marks where cars have hit that. And on Kensington Road, at the other entrance to the lane, there's a black steel fence which has countless dents in it. It's actually been pushed in by cars trying to turn into the lane. This lane is very narrow. I'm a tradesman. I drive a Hilux. And when I drive into the lane on the way home, I have to be very careful because my car only just fits down, right? So turning this laneway basically into, at times, a private driveway, which is what it's going to become when there's a 75-car car park underground, which is a great idea. It's a great idea to have a car park. It gets cars off the street and under the church. And as the community increases and grows, they need that parking. And it's welcomed by the community. But the issue is the placement of the entrance to the car park. In the side lane, it's going to be a bottleneck. It's going to be a massive log jam. It's already a log jam with only the open-air car park. Every day or 2 days, you can... Oh, I've got 1 minute. My suggestion is to... By the way, I love the building. The second design is a ripper. It looks great, and the community likes it as well. But the where the entrance to the car park should be is on the ridgeway, right? The first design was Epsom Road. That was a death trap. There would have been car accidents. Kensington Road, equally, is very dangerous. The lane cannot be used for the entrance because it's going to become a bottleneck and a logjam. But the Kensington, the ridgeway, if you come off the Epsom Road into the ridgeway, if the entrance to the underground car park was turning left underneath the church there, you could come off the ridgeway, off Epsom Road, into the ridgeway, turn left under the building. There'd be no problems for access and I'd still get the car park. And I think that would solve all the problems. And then there'd be no objection from me. And I've spoken to a lot of people in the street and they think that's a great idea. That's it for me. Thanks.
Thank you. Acting Lord Mayor.
Mark, can I just ask you a question
for you?
I just love the fact that you're solutions focused. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for seeing the positive aspects of the development. I want to ask because I think this is the critical question, as Councillor Oak has said. The moment we sort of go to access off Ridgeway, I'm sure there's going to be a whole heap of other residents that say, I don't want that in my street. I just want to ask, though, I'm a Kensington resident, and I know we have lots of lovely little laneways.
Yeah.
But my question, I guess, is around why so much traffic is kind of using that as a cut through when rightly you should be, doing what everyone else does and heading out onto Epsom Road and battling the traffic. Can I just ask that question?
Try pulling out of the Ridgeway onto Epsom Road. Give it a go. You'll be sitting there for 10 minutes in the morning and coming home the same.
I guess what I'm saying, though, is a lot of us in Kensington put up with exactly that. We don't use the rat runs. Why is it that you should be using the rat run?
Just me. There are so many cars in the morning that use that lane to get down to Kensington Road.
Okay, thank you.
A lot of cars. And also in the afternoons, a lot of cars and a lot of locals even go up to Bangalore Street or into the Ridgeway. There's a second lane further down, which is used a lot as well. And those lanes were used for use.
For the horse and cart back in the day, yes.
But now we have cars and they are used.
Thanks
and,
very much.
Yeah, no problem.
We do have a lot of councillors that know the Kensington area very well, so we'll be getting right down in the weeds tonight, I suspect. I now call on Kate McNeil to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall. Okay, it should be magicking up onto the screen as you make your way to the lectern.
Don't start until I get my
life at retrain. All right, just a reminder, you do have 3 minutes.
Okay.
Kate.
Thank you, Councillor Rees and other councillors, for the opportunity to address you this evening. I really do appreciate the work that the church community has done and also council staff have undertaken.
Sorry, Kate, can you just pull the microphone? Thank you. Sorry.
Start the clock again. Really feel that there's been a great deal of work done by councillors, council staff and the church community to get us from the initial proposal to where we are now. However, I do feel that we're not quite there yet in terms of traffic management, as we've been hearing, and access and egress to the proposed underground parking. And for that reason, I request that no permit be granted until these matters are adequately addressed. Now, I live with my partner at number one, the Ridgeway. Number one, the Ridgeway. The house is flush against the right-of-way. For 30 years, she has been constantly vigilant, ensuring that proposed developments do not increase the traffic flow in the right-of-way. And I've been at it for 20 years. Council has supported our interventions, and as a result, we have managed to moderate the impact on our amenity and the physical integrity of the house and the surrounding area. So my task is, once again, to ensure that council and council officers fully grasp the challenges of the site. It may not be clear in the plans that the Ridgeway is an extremely narrow laneway. It's actually approximately 2.66 metres. I've been out there with the ruler. I do not know if this meets the recommended minimum for a right-of-way that carries traffic, but I do know that the general recommendation is 3 metres. This is less than 3 metres, and wider if there is to be trucks and bus traffic, both of which occur in this right-of-way. So the line down the middle is misleading. There is no, it sort of indicates as if it's two-way. There is clearly not room for two-way. There is barely room for one. The Ridgeway, so what happens is that cars hit the bollard, as Mark was telling us, scrape the side of our house and the fence, and also have to work hard to avoid the power, the post on the other side. The report makes no reference to the trucks, rubbish collection vehicles and buses that will be using this right-of-way. Our side entrance roller door, which has been mentioned, will be rendered inaccessible on the weekends if the car park access is located on the right-of-way. In the past, after previous redevelopment, the church was required to erect a fence, and there's here and a gate, so that they did not encroach upon the right-of-way. The current proposal does away with this fence, effectively annexing the right-of-way opposite our property. So we want to see that fence put back. Now, two alternatives to the car park entry were first proposed. One was the right-of-way and the other was the Ridgeway. I don't feel that the Ridgeway proposal has been explored. I've heard something about the trees. Council's actually cutting down those trees that apparently we need to preserve. No one wants to keep those trees. The entry to the underground car park could be off the Ridgeway. Entry here, and if necessary, a pull-out bay here in the area that the church already owns. And I think that that needs to be taken into account in the plans. So I would urge the committee to reject the current proposal until these concerns are adequately addressed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kate. Acting Lord Mayor.
I've just got a question for officers, Evan, and I admit that I'm sort of putting you on the spot with this one, but it seems to me, and I know that I wouldn't be very popular at my local coffee shop if this happened, but is there any sense here in dealing with the one-way issue now? Because I feel like a lot of the problems that we're seeing presented here are because it's supposedly two-way.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. In relation to that matter, I'd say that that's an existing condition, and from what I'm hearing tonight, it sounds like an issue which has been occurring in this location for some time. It's not something which is necessarily specific to this proposal, and I'd probably recommend that it's something that could be considered by the council through a separate process. There may be merit in it in terms of this application. This application deals with the existing conditions on the site, and it actually goes some way to improving the existing conditions on the site by providing space on private land for vehicles to pass if that conflict does occur whilst it is a two-way street. And it also means that there is a clear delineation from the way the access has been constructed to encourage vehicles to use the site in a certain manner, which would encourage it to operate in a one-way fashion as much as possible.
Thanks, Evan. And while you're on your feet, we are hearing from a lot of submissions saying build the underground car park entrance on the Ridgeway. Was that something that was deliberated over through the planning process?
I'd have to say on that matter, Councillor, having not been involved in this project in detail through the project, that I can't state that it has specifically. What I do know through reviewing the content today is that the applicant and our traffic engineers have obviously considered the original proposal as it was lodged and found it not to be an acceptable outcome. I would be very surprised if through discussions between technical traffic engineers for the applicant and our own, that there weren't discussions around what would be the best outcome for the site. And that would be a holistic view. It might not only look at just traffic circulation in the area, it might also consider matters such as council trees and other assets along the Ridgeway. So I would have faith that all those options were considered. But what I can say is that council's traffic engineers reviewed all the technical advice provided by the applicant and their engineers, and also used their local knowledge to consider the arrangement that's been proposed, and they have found it to be acceptable.
And Kate mentioned the destruction of some trees as well. Do you want to comment on that?
Yes, Kate mentioned that the trees may have had an impact on the consideration of a vehicle access on the Ridgeway, which may have required removal of trees, and that may very well be correct. It may have impacted on a decision as to whether or not a crossover would be appropriate in that location if it was to require the removal of council trees in that location.
All right, thank you very much. Evan, thank you. Kate as well. I now call on Anthony Bale to speak for no minute more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall, Anthony.
My name's Anthony Bailey. I live at 21 Epsom Road, which is between the Ridgeway and Bangalore Street. The main issues, like, we're going over and over it, so I'm going to try and keep this fairly short and sweet. The use of the laneway for access for this underground car park is going to create really dangerous traffic conditions coming back out onto Kensington Road. I don't know whether any of you people have driven down that laneway and tried to turn onto Kensington Road, but it's like playing Russian roulette. You can't see the cars coming around the corner off Epsom Road. You've only got three lengths of cars, and all of a sudden you've got cars coming over the top of you. It's a really big problem. And if we're going to have increased numbers of people attending the church, like, we like the church, we don't have a problem there, but if you're going to have increased numbers, that's going to create more issues. The parking's also a major issue now, and it's going to be in even more demand with increased numbers attending a larger building. Members don't seem to have a lot of regard for the parking restrictions that we have around the area. On Sunday mornings, they would park in the permit parking zones only, and they're quite blatant about it. If you go out and say, look, this is a permit zone, they tell you to get lost. They'll park when they're picking their elderly clients up. They'll park across the ends of the road in the no parking zones, and it blocks your view of the street. You just can't see what's going on. And if we're going to, I know you're saying that there's underground parking going to be there alleviating this, but it just doesn't seem to be going to happen the way people are using the parking now, and the parking officers are fully aware of what's going on there. So that's all I'd like to say to that, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Anthony. Put your case well. I now call on Mina McHale to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall, Mina. I believe you have a presentation.
Oh, it's just a picture that I put up on Facebook.
All right, terrific.
Yeah, so this was on the Kensington Good Karma Network, which is a local group. I'm on it. There might be other guys here on it as well. I just want to address a couple of points. If we have access from the Ridgeway, so I'm from the church. I also live up the road on Kensington Road. If we have access from the Ridgeway, because I've been involved in this for the last 2 years, we're probably going to be cutting down a few established trees, and more than likely we're going to have to get rid of four current street parking spots. The outcome of what we wanted to do was to increase the number of car parks, not reduce them. So that's one point about the Ridgeway entrance. And the second point is people come through the laneway anyway. They come to either drop off an old person or they're a parent that's coming to drop off their child. So if we've got a car park or not, it won't change the outcome of the traffic All it will do is it will distribute the traffic underground, whereas at the moment they're just driving through onto Kensington Road and then they're continuing on. So this car park's actually going to be designed to absorb it, and as per one of the councillors' suggestion, we do have an operational management plan, and as part of that is going to be a traffic management plan so that we can manage the peak times. So, for example, it'll be a Sunday, it'll fall on Easter, Christmas and our other services. I just want to focus on this drawing. I came on the project around March, and I've been carrying on since December. We basically turned the project over. We did a 180. So the initial design was pretty ugly. We canned the architect. We also brought on the following consultants. We got TreeLogic, which were the arborist. We got Cardano Traffic, which are very well reputed. We got Openwork. They were our first landscape architect. We got Make Architecture, who are here today and have been phenomenal to deal with, and they've dealt before on Melbourne City Council projects. Lovell Chen's been our heritage consultant. High calibre. You guys have already referenced them a few times before our meet, and SJB obviously here as well. So basically this summarises what we have done. We've canned the architect. We've brought in a landscape architect. We've increased the cost of build. We've changed the entrance to the car park because we felt it was the best thing under the advice of the traffic consultant. We've reduced the size. We've reduced the scale. We've reduced the car parking spots because we've reduced the scale, not out of our wants, but more so out of as a reaction. We've made sure there was no shadowing, and that's a res code regulation anyway, so we would have done that. So people comment on shadowing. There's no shadowing that would have occurred with either drawing. And we also made sure that there was no impact on trees, not only on our property, but also on the streets around us. So we felt we've done what we could. I held a sort of a knee-jerk forum on Facebook. Could we have done better? Potentially. Are we commercial developers? No. We're just a non-for-profit organisation. We serve at the church. We're all volunteers. And we've done this out of the goodness of what we felt will see us into the future. So everyone represented here tonight's a volunteer. No one's been paid to come here, apart from the guys that we paid. Which are our architects and SJB.
Not the architects you can, though.
No, not the architects you can, yeah. Any questions?
No, I don't think there are. There are. Councillor Francis Gilley.
I'm just curious, in terms of the numbers of the church, it sounds like it's growing. How many people do you have in the congregation? And yep. How many were there, say, 10 years ago, just to get a sense of what's
going
on?
Question. So I grew up on the west. I then moved, my parents moved out to Tullamarine. When my wife and I got married, we decided to live in Kensington. We walk up to the church. There's probably another dozen or so people just here that walk or would it be a one-minute commute to church. So the church has been a decision as to why we've moved to Kensington. So whether the population's increased or not doesn't necessarily reflect whether the traffic's increased or not. We now either bicycle or we either walk to church. That aside, the parish as a congregation is decreasing because we're actually building churches in the surrounding suburbs. So we're a Coptic Orthodox faith. And we're constantly finding sites in areas like Melton, areas like Hallam. We recently built a church in on Latrobe Street. So we're constantly trying to address where our congregation's moving to, and we're building parishes there. At the actual St. Mary's Parish is in decline, both statistically, and the church treasurer who's here tonight can probably reinforce that just based on our numbers. So we're actually in decline, but I can understand how, with heightened emotions, it might look like we're actually increasing. That would be the answer.
All right, thank you very much, Mina. Are there any further questions? No, there's not. Okay, thank you very much for that. I now call on Dina Shehata to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall, Dina.
Good evening, councillors, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Dina. I am a resident and ratepayer of Melbourne City Council. I'm also a lawyer and an employee within the Melbourne City Council, and I'm a volunteer within Melbourne City Council. So I have come here tonight to offer my support for this proposed building. I'd like to talk about my parents and my daughter tonight, who are all members of the Melbourne St. Mary's Parish. We moved into Kensington 5 years ago. My senior parents call this parish their second home. They have received immeasurable support from this community for a number of decades. My dad, here tonight, is part of the senior men's group that go to visit each other weekly and also assist with the church grounds services like general maintenance, cleaning, maintaining church books and candles, and also singing on Sundays as a deacon. My mother also enjoys a lot of friendships with the senior ladies at the community. They have felt an infinite sense of belonging to the Kensington neighbourhood since they immigrated from Egypt, so much so that they sold their family home in the West so that they can live down the road from church. Apologies. My dad loves the relaxed, leafy environment of the suburb, its proximity to transport, which he often uses to visit friends or parish members in hospital, or even frequently goes for a swim down at the YMCA, or walks our dog Kipper down JJ Hollins Park. Twice a year, we look forward to attending the community fete that the parish holds. Although my mother has professor cooking credentials, it gives my daughter a weekend crash course into Egyptian culture, which she has never experienced firsthand, being born and brought up here in Australia. I know a lot of neighbours that look forward to these weekends as well, as do the parishioners, to offer their hospitality. My father runs the church bookshop. He constantly remarks on the lack of space he has to fill it with more English literature, as he receives weekly requests from parishioners that don't speak Arabic. This brings me to my final point, which is the parish is inspiringly committed to catering for the Australian generation of Coptic Orthodox Christians, like my daughter, and making sure all these services that we provide are available in both English and in Arabic. This noble commitment is a struggle with the services presently available, and we see it on a weekly basis. The proposed building is purpose-built with the next generation of kids in mind and wants to ensure that my parents, my daughter, and my family and I can all come to church at the same time and be able to be offered services in their preferred language, be it English or Arabic. I'd like to thank you for my time.
Thank you very much, Mina. I don't think there's any questions. No. Okay, sorry, I thought there might have been a question there. Thank you very much for that presentation. I now call on Dina Shahata. Oh, sorry, Dina. I'm sorry, Dina. I'm Jimmy Morcos. Welcome, Jimmy. I apologise for that error. Dina?
Thank you. My name is Jimmy Morcos. I'm also a lawyer here in Melbourne City. So today I feel compelled to speak on behalf of my Coptic community, my family, and for all those that experienced the joys and lows of being part of the St. Mary's Church community since its early beginnings in 1972. The history of the Coptic Orthodox Church is that it is an apostolic church from Egypt, established in 55 AD. The Copts began to migrate into Australia from the late 1960s. My family was one of them. My father, who's here today, my mother and my brother and sister migrated to Australia in 1971. I was later born in 1977. St. Mary's has been our church since the very beginning. The church was purchased in 1972 from the United Church of Australia and has been actively used ever since. My father was the first secretary of the church from 1972. At the time, we were 64 families. Now we have a number of churches, a school, a hostel, two monasteries, a theological college throughout Victoria. So going by your point before, the church has grown, but also significantly we've grown into other regions of Victoria, not just in Kensington. In the early years of St. Mary's Church, many local non-Coptic people that lived in Kensington continued to attend its services, and our growing community did its utmost to include them as part of our community. This became their place of worship, and we developed a long-term generational relationship with them for years thereafter. One particular family continued to attend the church and was later told to us that one of the stained glass windows in which was in memory of a devout member who had passed on was a family member of theirs. We have kept this and all other stained glass windows in memory of those that worked hard in building this church to today. In reference to my father, Basil, who's here tonight, he was the recipient of 7 community service awards given to him by the Governor of Victoria for engaging our community of St. Mary's Church for many years in helping the deserted children of Victoria. As one of the pioneers of the church that arrived in 1971, Dad spoke very good English, as he was an English school teacher. Dad today is 81. He continues to attend the church services every Sunday and is very encouraged by the growth of the community, but is also somewhat disenchanted with the lack of facilities. Given that he is elder and that he was given the community, he's given the community and to society as a whole, it would be great that he bears witness today to the great future of our community of St. Mary's that these plans have to offer. And Dad taught me the meaning of community, and I today manage a law firm in the heart of Melbourne CBD that is very much community-based.
Jimmy, I'll ask you to conclude now.
Okay, no problems. Look, I'll just briefly, quickly, I have 2 children.
Quite a few people to get through, Jimmy, so I must ask you to conclude.
No problems. And I was just going to raise a quick point. So, I think this is very, very important. So I've got 2 children, and I too grew up in this community. It would be great if we can have an opportunity for them to also be a part of it and be part of these great facilities that it has to offer. Thank you.
Thanks, Jimmy. Dina made that point as well very, very well. I now call on Fatty Malik to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall, Maddie. Fatty.
Good evening, councillors. My name is Fatty Malik. I'm an MCC in Melbourne City Council ratepayer and current treasurer of St. Mary's Coptic Orthodox College. I've been serving in this role now for 6 years. It was evident from day one since joining the new church committee that the church was in real need of improving its facilities. As a treasurer of St. Mary's Church, there's not a day that goes past without members approaching me and saying, what's happening with this community project? We are at maximum capacity and we're in urgent need of making the most use out of the land and the buildings that we have to make it more comfortable for the parishioners and the locals. Our Sunday school rooms are literally like sardine cans. I'm not sure if we have visual to show.
We're just getting it up on screen.
Sure.
Now, Fatty.
I've prepared a couple of photos for you to see. A group of 25 children, 3 to 4 years old children that I squashed in a small room, no more than 3 by 3 metres. And there's one more other. So that's the facilities we're facing at the moment. It really amazes me how the kids continue to bring these children to church week in, week out with extremely poor facilities like this. I also note the majority of locals absolutely love the church and are happy with the way it operates. I know this as we get approached on a regular basis by locals and passers-by, particularly during church fates, to let us know how wonderful our community is and how they wouldn't want it any other way. They also commend us on how we are such an active community and are always happy to reach out to those in need. We also note our submissions received well over 100 letters of support. Thank you, Aaron. We also note that our project received well over 100 letters of support of City of Melbourne residents and ratepayers, as mentioned in the planning report. There are many other supporters who would have liked to come tonight, but they're busy preparing meals for the homeless that's running on this evening. In closing, it was a delight to see that the councillor's planning team is fully supportive of the project, and I wish to register my strongest support for this vital community project, along with a large number of supporters that are present here tonight. And if I can kindly ask everyone in support of this project to please be upstanding. Thank you. Any questions?
Hang on.
Mark, you just...
Mark, you objected about both entrances. You objected about an entrance from Epsom Road. You objected about an entrance from Bridgeway.
Fatty, thank you. You've made a tremendous presentation. Thank you for all you do for your community. This matter is not decided by a straw poll of the gallery. I'm afraid it's decided by elected representatives up here. Our next speaker is Wes Malik, to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome, Wes.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Wes Malik, and I'll be very quick. I am a ratepayer, an MCC ratepayer, have been for 25 years, and I've lived in multiple locations in North Melbourne, Flemington, and also Parkville. I love the area, I love the city of Melbourne, and I love this country to see this magnificent banter between these people here. But I just want to say I'm also a father of four young girls, okay? So peace and tranquility is high on my agenda. I also own and operate a medium-sized engineering company, which is located just opposite the Arden Street Football Club in North Melbourne, and have been doing that for the past 16 years. And I think this is a wonderful proposal. I really do. I think this is exactly what we need, a peaceful place, peace and tranquility, and I wasn't inferring about what's happening here tonight. It's more about what this city needs. I'm in construction. My engineering company sees a lot of huge buildings in congestion and arguments and toxicity. The alternatives to what could be on this site is just daunting. We're talking about Bible study, Vespers, peace, harmony, love, interaction with the community. I strongly support this project, and I would like to dedicate the remaining 1 minute and 36 seconds to Mr. Jimmy Morcos. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Wes. Our next speaker is Pauline Majala. Welcome to Town Hall, Pauline. You have 3 minutes.
Good evening, all. My name is Pauline. I'm a Kensington resident. I moved to Kensington 4 years ago because I fell in love with the community, proximity to the CBD, to my workplace at Western Hospital and St Mary's Church. My husband has close ties to St Mary's Church as well, receiving his Prep to Year 12 education at the Diocesan Sister School of St Mary's Coptic Orthodox College, which was formerly in Clifton Hill and now in Coolaroo. My husband was called to the service of priesthood in December 2015. Although we knew our world would change, we were supported by our local community. In January 2018, my husband was asked to be permanently based at St Mary's Coptic Church in Kensington, out of necessity for an English-speaking Sunday school and youth services. Although I'd commenced my service at St Mary's Parish 12 months beforehand, the addition and support of my husband, along with the community, has allowed me to be a part of the following church-led activities. Assistance at the weekly homeless food service offered at North Melbourne YMCA. This service offers a weekly dinner for some 40-plus residents every Tuesday night, offering meals cooked by the senior parish members. Through our parish Sunday school initiative, we offer biannual subsidised trips for our teenagers between 16 to 18. Last summer, we spent a weekend in Barwon Heads helping them de-stress before the beginning of their Year 12 curriculum. And we're also currently fundraising for their end of year trip, hoping to fundraise throughout the Kensington market. We run a weekly youth sports evening at the Kensington YMCA, giving the kids a chance to take their mind off stress, take their mind off any family issues, and to speak to their youth mentors, which are there with them every week. The proposed building is everything I want to assist with my youth services. Teenagers need a space, a place that they can feel comfortable in, and our current buildings don't provide this. Our weekly food services need a well-equipped kitchen for our volunteers to actually prepare the food for a growing attendee base, and our current facilities don't provide this either. We don't even have a large assembly hall where we can gather under shelter for when it's raining. My husband and I constantly wonder how much better our parish services could be if we had the appropriate purpose-built facilities, and this is what makes us so passionate about this building and the future possibilities it would allow us to realise together. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pauline, and thank you for all you do for your community. I now call on Claire Mitchell to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall, Claire.
Good evening, everyone.
I'm a resident of the Ridgeway in Kensington, and I am firstly would like to applaud the members of the St Mary's Parish for all the work you do within your community. I've had many positive interactions with a lot of you over the years, and I can really see the passion and the benefits that you provide for your community as a whole. I, like other residents within the Ridgeway, think that the proposal on the whole is a great idea. I have significant concerns about the laneway at the rear of the development being used for access to the car park. The car park itself, putting a basement car park in, is much needed. I think everyone would agree with that on the whole. The main concern I have is that the proposal seeks to rely on the narrow laneway that you've seen in the pictures tonight to cater for a very high number of cars arriving and departing at the same time. So this is not general use over the course of the day. This will be a huge number of cars arriving and departing at specific times as the church events occur. That will not only cause congestion in the laneway itself, but along the Ridgeway and Epsom Road intersection as well. Those congestions are already occurring at the moment, and it will only increase the scale of the problem. The second point I'd like to make is that the two-way access of that laneway must be preserved. It's a public highway that has been used as a two-way access for many years, and the reason it's so significant is because the Ridgeway at the other end cannot access Kensington Road. So if you're going to direct all of the traffic from Bangalore Street and the Ridgeway up through Epsom Road and onto Macaulay Road through those traffic lights, you're going to have a much more significant problem of traffic going out onto Epsom Road. At the moment, the reason the laneway is used significantly as a two-way access is because residents can avoid that intersection that banks up with traffic going into the city, coming from Ascot Vale and Moonee Ponds and Essendon. All that traffic goes into the city onto Macaulay Road, whereas if you're going to down Kensington Road to get to either the childcare centre, the school, Kensington Road down to Footscray, over to Williamstown, all of those areas, all of that traffic will then go onto Epsom Road if you close off that accessway. Similarly, on the other side, coming up through Kensington Road, it's essential that that maintains two-way access. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Claire. And you are our final speaker for this evening. So as the Chair of Planning, I am going to put the recommendation on the screen, and I would look for a councillor to second that. Thank you, Councillor Pinder. And I will speak briefly to this matter. As I said before, there are a lot of councillors here who know this part of Melbourne very, very well and very much love the suburb of Kensington and the surrounds. I was at the JJ Holland ground with my daughter for a game of soccer on the weekend, and I took the opportunity to actually walk this site because this is a development proposal which has been before council for many, many years now, and it's something that I think councillors and council officers have spent a lot of time weighing up. I think it's fair to say that the initial proposal that was presented to us back in 2015, I think the technical term for that would be a dog. And look, in some ways, it's a testimony to the planning team here at the City of Melbourne that this proposal has come so far from where it was in 2015. Literally, the Coptic Church have gone back to the drawing board, engaged really, you know, top-notch architects through Make Architecture, worked with a council, worked with the community, and I think brought the development into something which is unrecognisable, really, from what we first saw back in 2015. There's no doubt that this is a very difficult proposal to assess, and there are aspects of this proposal, which in isolation I can't see council approving. But when you take the project in its entirety and you look at the project on balance, I think that you come to, well, I as a councillor come to a view that this is something that I can support. I mean, I would say, for example, ordinarily the demolition of two heritage buildings is not something that this council would support. But when you balance that against the extremely high quality design of what's being proposed, with the reference to the Coptic archways, the colonnades, done in a very sensitive and, I think, well-designed way, I say on balance, I think that the demolition, when I weigh that up against the demolition of the two heritage buildings, I say, look, that's something I think I, as a councillor, can accept. We've heard a lot tonight about the rear laneway, and I'm actually going to suggest that that I think we do need to get a proper traffic study done of Macaulay Road, Epsom Road, the Ridgeway, and this laneway. I am sort of surprised that it is a two-way laneway. I'll just put that out there. And I would like to actually see a proper traffic analysis done, not just of the laneway, but of the surrounding streets, so that we can make that area work as well as possible. In terms of the laneway and the traffic, I think I certainly have the view that the underground car park, that's not something that is cheap to build, does deliver a significant benefit to the surrounding streets. That's taking 60 cars off the surrounding streets and putting them underground at the church, and that's, I believe, a significant public benefit. Also, the overall scale of the building, I think, needs to be weighed up against the fact that it is a high-quality design. And at the end of the day, this is a place of assembly, and this is a community that I think adds a lot to Melbourne and does a lot of good in the broader community. So, look, all up on balance, and I do stress it is on balance, I am able to support the recommendation up on the screen. Councillor Pinder.
Thank you, Councillor Rees. I concur with everything you've said. Look, I'm a regular churchgoer, and my church in Middle Park, while it holds about 300 people, recent renovations, each Sunday there's only about 100, 120 parishioners who attend, except, of course, during Easter and Christmas when that balloons out. So in response, Councillor Gilley earlier asked about numbers, and I think that's a fair summarisation of churches, you know, and we do have diminishing numbers, but the facilities, the additional facilities that it provides, is superb for the community. So I'm happy to support this the officer's recommendations on this, and I think, as earlier mentioned, I'm sure that the officers would have looked at every aspect. It is a place of worship and assembly. And I think the long-awaited design response shows that MAKE Architects and SJV Planning, who tends to work very well with council, have really hit the mark with this design. It is, as Mark Chudley said earlier, it is really good. It's superb. And, of course, there's 100 or more letters from residents and or parishioners who have supported it as well. I think the amendments are thoughtful and considerate. It's been a long time in the making. I think the benefits to the community are manifold. Again, as Councillor Rees said, in isolation, yeah, could be perhaps different responses, but as a whole, for tonight, I'm in full support of this of the officer's recommendations.
Thank you, Councillor Pinder. Are there any speakers against the motion? Are there any further speakers for the motion? Acting Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Chair. I won't reiterate all the points that you've already made, but again, on balance, I think I can comfortably support this as well. I agree with you. It's come a very long way from the first position. I do want to just touch on the points that Claire and Mark raised, though, in that I think we all share the concerns around traffic management, and when it comes time for this development to be implemented, that should I still be here, that I would move a motion requesting a traffic management study, because I am concerned about the two-way nature, but also take the points about access onto what is a very busy road, being a Kensington resident myself. So when this development does get underway, if it is supported tonight, that's what my undertaking would be to move a motion around a traffic management study, just to make sure that we're, as the Chair said, getting this area critically right, and that we're not disadvantaging unduly residents immediately adjacent. But I also do want to make the remark that being a Kensington resident, when I walk past that church and see it in full use, and I know that's not a direct planning consideration, see it in full use, I think it adds so much to the area and the architecture, I think will be an absolute asset to Kensington.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. Are there any other speakers for the motion? Councillor Riley.
Thank you, Chair. Look, it's been a while. Every Tuesday night we sit here, but it's been a long time since I've seen so much passion in the room for a church. It is absolutely wonderful, and I congratulate you all. And the stories that you've told us about the history of why you go to this church has been remarkable. I do definitely believe this permit should be granted, and I do wish you every success as you go through that building phase.
Thank you, Councillor Riley. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair. You did sum it up very well, and I agree with your initial comments. I too did see the original plan and have been following the application for 3 years now, I think it has been, and agree fully that what we're looking at today is very, very different to what was originally applied for, and in every way is far superior. I note that the comment has been made that there should have been a bit more of a mediation rather than a crash through. That's not quite the way the Planning Environment Act works, but what the applicant has done in listening to feedback from round one, if we call it, to making all of these considerable changes, to working with Council's design team to further improve those changes, and to continue to take on board the very real concerns of locals in particular around whether it's heritage, design, height, traffic, parking, you name it, what we've actually seen here is a lot stronger commitment to consultation than is strictly required, and a process that, from the applicant side, I think has been very generous, and I commend them for that. I'm surprised that we haven't discussed more about the heritage today, so I'll leave those comments aside. I was all ready to go on that, but maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that. The parking situation and the traffic situation has been well ventilated tonight, and I note the Acting Lord Mayor's commitment that if this permit is acted on, that the situation will be reviewed, as rightly it should be reviewed. But there's an existing use right here. There's an expansion of existing uses to take in more of the land available to the applicant. And like the other councillors here, I certainly agree that this will be a wonderful addition to the Kensington community, expansion of what's existing there, and the permit certainly should be supported.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett. Are there any other speakers for or against? Councillor Watts.
Yes, I just want to make it clear, of course, in our motion here, the 61 objections, and I was quite surprised tonight. I had come to this matter thinking the objections will be around heritage, which, of course, is a very important element in our planning for personally. But I can see that the objections seem to be around the way traffic is managed primarily. And I can't imagine this is insurmountable as the project unfolds. We're faced often with development applications which are huge and invasive, with adverse impact. And what we see here is a very respectful development, and it makes it very much easier for me to countenance the demolition of heritage properties, which are not used as dwellings. They are used as church property, and I'm quite comfortable with that. I commend the church and its parishioners on behalf of the city.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Councillor Francis Gilley.
Just one point, but a couple of comments. The first thing is for those of you who are residents who, you know, made your submissions, I really want to acknowledge, you know, your graciousness and recognition of what the church is delivering. You wanted to make a point. It was really well made. But, you know, just want all of you did it in a way that upholds community. So thank you for that. In terms of the guys of St. Mary's, again, you know, obviously you're concerned about community and you're creating community, obviously in a really exciting and dynamic way. So congratulations on that. I tried to start a business in Egypt for about 4 years and I was unsuccessful. And every time I went for a permit, they used to say, shwaya, shwaya. And it seems, slowly. And it seems like you've been going slowly. I want to take a moment and go just slowly for a second. I'm tempted. One of the things it seems, though, that happens is that graciousness and respect breaks down when you're trying to drop someone off and when there's a lot of people and then you're rushing and you're trying to get somewhere and then you forget those things. And so at that point, then horns are going and shouting happens. And so, and at those moments, you won't remember this. So I think it's actually one of the things that I would ask, and I don't know, so procedurally now I'm asking over here, is that what you've said in terms of looking at traffic, I think is actually really important to maintain this graciousness. And so I'm not sure if it's just about a traffic report, but it's actually about really looking at the space that you've created, making it one way. I think you guys really, as a church, getting committed to supporting your community to make sure that if there are rules, you acknowledge them, even when you've got to drop off dad to the, you know. So there's something in there that we have to do that piece of work well. And I don't know how we do that. I don't want to say schwire and say let's no, but I do want to make it important. And I do then want to say to you, I think you have a real responsibility to acknowledge how the community are glad that you're there as a church, and then when you're in a rush, honour them.
Thank you, Councillor Francis. Councillor Oak.
Sorry, there's been a lot of discussion over here because I like Councillor Watts and another fellow Kensington residents are a bit nervous about this one coming up. I've been following it for a while, and when you go to the bus stop or drop my daughter at school, there's a lot of conversations about this particular application. So I don't like planning at the best of times, but when it's in my hood, I get even more concerned. But the number one take-home message is that we all love Kensington, and we all love the community in particular, you know, in this area, the church and the activities and the, you know, the vibrancy that the community at the church bring to that space, as well as the residents that surround it, are really important and really exciting. And, you know, this development allows those, you know, really important placemaking activities to continue and expand. And obviously there are really personal reasons for the parish, for the children that you were mentioned to obviously have better facilities, but I read in the proposal also such great opportunities to engage with the community and the school and the schools, and I think that's really great as well. But obviously, you know, traffic is a concern, but it's a concern across all of Kensington. And one real thing that we can do, and absolutely what the Acting Lord Mayor has mentioned around the traffic review, if this proceeds and if the development proceeds, and obviously monitoring it, and there are things that we can do in the lead up to that, and there are things in the condition that makes sure that the applicant and the churches have it within their operational management plan as well. But it's a very similar situation to the Woolworths development in North Melbourne. It's in a community with a similar issues where access and for the local community is very precious, and precious from wanting to, you know, maybe for slightly different reasons. But it's also very similar in that there are not many ways to get in and out as well, because our traffic engineers at the City of Melbourne have done very well in trying to cut off rat runs. So actually the alternatives or the options to actually, you know, work through this are complex, because you don't want to shut off or close more streets because we end up with islands and you actually can't get out because we've closed off so much of our area. So we've got to be really careful about, you know, how we approach this. But we do have a current resolution for that Woolworths development whereby once it's constructed and once it's then in operation, there is a live resolution on council agenda whereby traffic will be actively looked at and reviewed and brought back to council if there is an issue. And we already have a range of options that we've already determined could be put in place to rectify the suggested or proposed or the predicted traffic issues. So we have already done a lot of work in the lead up to this development in North Melbourne. And I can imagine that through the transport portfolio chaired through Councillor Frances Gilley, we can already start to look at options and as the acting Lord Mayor has said, do something at council about that. So all things considered, and noting a real concern, and I absolutely take on board that we need to address it with the church, with the community, and with council operations. I support the recommendation, and we'll take on board through the transport portfolio the traffic issue as well.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? All right, before I put that to the vote, I might just say as a way of quick reply as the mover that I do very much like the idea of us doing a traffic study, and so then I think we will formally note in the minutes that there is an intention of the council to put, or of the councillors to put forward a motion at a future meeting of FMC around a traffic study at this particular location. I will now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, please raise your hands. I'll declare that carried unanimously. Thank you very much. We might just break for 1 minute and 1 minute only just to give those folks who don't want to continue for the rest of the meeting the opportunity to leave. Alrighty, the next agenda item is 6.3, Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendment C278 for sunlight to public parks. Would councillors like a presentation on that one? No? Okay. I will. I am therefore happy to... We've got no speakers on this one? Okay. I am happy to put the motion that is up on the screen, noting that there is an amendment there at 7.2. I call on a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. Okay, I'll now speak briefly to this. Look, it will come as no surprise to anyone in this room that this city is undergoing very intensive development, and as that development increases, we need a plan to better manage access of sunlight to our city's beautiful parks. The last time the sunlight policy was reviewed was back in 1999, and so I think it was unanimously agreed that it was an excellent idea when put forward by Councillors Oak and Councillor Leppett that there be a review, and I personally want to extend my gratitude for them for beginning the process which we have arrived at here today. The scale of the development in the city has also led to higher density and higher developments, and that has meant that this review is and this policy which has been developed is well and truly needed. I am advised by officers that our comprehensive research data has shown that 95% of people of the 565 people who participated in the community engagement exercise we undertook considered access to sunlight to be critical in the way they use and enjoy the city's parks. I sort of asked the bigger question of the 5% who didn't agree with that proposition than the 95%, I must say. I also note that 50% of all Victorians are deficient in vitamin D over the winter months. So natural access to sun is essential to our health. It's also critical to supporting biodiversity in urban environments. Trees and plants need sunlight to grow. So Amendment C278 proposes to introduce a revised approach to protect sunlight and access to parks. It does that in a couple of key ways. The first thing it does is increase sunlight protection hours to 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. In winter on June 21 from the current 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. On September the 21st. It also moves the date, which I've just covered, from the spring equinox to the winter solstice. Sorry, I had to think for a moment there to get my equinox and solstice right. Of course, those people familiar with Roman history would know that the winter solstice was...
Roman history.
..was, in fact, the biggest party of the year for the Romans and, in fact, was the precursor to Christmas. In our Judeo-Christian traditions, and so in many ways this proposal tonight is Christmas for our city's parks.
That was beautiful.
It's been a long day, everybody. In terms of the new categories of protections, we do have a no additional overshadowing control across the municipality, including the Hoddle Grid and South Bank, and the areas of growth where there, we moderate the impact of no additional overshadowing with these new controls. I would just conclude by highlighting the 7.2, where it's the council is seeking interim protections. That is, we want these protections to take effect as quickly as possible. This is a rare thing for the city to seek, but we do it in this case because we know that this process will take some time to work its way through and to seek final approval, and we want to avoid a situation where we have a deluge of development on sites which haven't yet received the protection and thus causing further overshadowing of our parks. So I guess that should be taken as a signal to all about how much this council values the importance of sunlight to our parks, that we are taking this unusual step to seek that interim protection. Councillor Levitt.
Thank you, Chair. I enjoyed your foray into Roman history and agree with everything you've said. I would wholeheartedly like to support this. Councillor Oak moved the motion to review the local policy clause, as you've mentioned, Chair, back on the 10th of February 2015. It's been a while since then to do an initial review, and management advised that a comprehensive review of sunlight to public places should be undertaken, and that's why this has taken a little while, but it has been absolutely worth it because what has come back is quite remarkable. I think the Hoddle & Co report that's attached to this report really sets out well how these new controls coupled with an amended local policy might work in practice and does some fantastic community consultation as well that's also included in the report. So I'd really like to thank officers for actioning that request. The issue is just as important now as it was when the report was first commissioned. This is a community health issue. It's not just a straightforward development issue. We are going to see more and more development pressure, not just in our highest density areas like the Hoddle Grid, which of course is covered by C270, as is most of South Bank and Docklands, but also across the municipality, where we don't always have mandatory height limits, but you've got to make sure that our development controls are coupled with good policy that tries to protect those places that people will use in future to recreate and stay healthy as a community. So I'm delighted that we're at this point. I'll be fascinated to see what we get out of the exhibition process, because what is being proposed here is a very central city solution to a problem. It's a solution that is being applied in high density areas that probably wouldn't be the approach that would be taken in other parts of Victoria, but it is the right solution for the City of Melbourne, and I know that it's going to take quite a while from now to get through that planning amendment process, but I do hope that people will have their say during the exhibition. So, yes, can I just finish by thanking officers for acting on this? Particular thanks to Rob and Jill and Andy for all of your work, and our external consultants with Leanne Hoddle and Emma for your leadership. I'm delighted that we're at this point, so I support it wholeheartedly.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Are there any speakers against the motion? Are there any further speakers for the motion? Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Councillor Rees. I, of course, support this. You mentioned Christmas when Emma walked me through the proposal that we're seeing before us tonight. It was like Christmas. No, I think that, you know, there, I remember when, you know, we first met Emma, you know, there's a lot of anticipation about, you know, or angst about, you know, this particular planning scheme amendment process. But as Councillor Leppard said, you know, it's taken time and for good reason. There's a lot of excellent work that's gone into it. It's a very significant recommendation that I and others hopefully will endorse tonight. And so quite rightly, we need the evidence behind it, and we need to, you know, have it all lined up ready for the panel process. But it is such a significant thing that we're doing, protecting, you know, that precious winter sun in all parks, not just in the central city, and the health and wellbeing impact of that is significant. It's, we don't need to go into any more stats. We've gone through quite a few, but it's, you know, you see a little bit of sunshine in the winter, and, you know, that will make you go out and be more active, and we need people to be more active, and with more and more people coming in and fewer spaces, although hopefully we're creating more and more green open space as well, which we intend to do. It's so important that we protect it. And, you know, Coyote in North Melbourne, this is a lot to do with her reminding me whenever we have developments, in particular in North Melbourne, overshadowing our precious parks there, you know, and pointing out the winter sun that we'll be losing and our inability in the current planning regime to do anything about it, that this is going to, you know, hopefully get us to a point, if it proceeds and is successful at panel, that we don't have to say, well, we can't do anything about it because the planning scheme only talks about September. So I look forward to seeing how this goes. I really hope that it proceeds and is successful and we receive a report that we can endorse and continue on. And thank you to Councillor Rees for 7.2. Given the significance of what we're doing, you know, we don't want to hopefully wait until the whole process goes to protect the precious winter sunlight in our community too. Thank you.
Are there any speakers, further speakers for or against? Councillor Watts?
I speak for it. Obviously, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? We really have to protect our sunlight in our parks. But I just wanted to point to the point number 5 there. Underpinning the review is sophisticated 3D modelling, providing an accurate picture, and I think it's really important that these technologies are employed for the public good. And I like to think if we move down this track and we're supported in this, that other municipalities benefit from the technology and benefit from the leadership we're showing.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? Okay, I might just briefly conclude by, again, going to not the Romans this time, not Christmas or the winter solstice, but actually something far more immediate than that, and that is the interim protection that we are seeking here, the interim overshadowing controls. And as I said, this is a city that is under a lot of development pressure at the moment, and for the sake of the parks in City North, in Carlton, in Arden and West Melbourne, we need to get these protections in place urgently. There are few things more important than sunlight to our parks, and so I'd implore the Planning Minister, Richard Wynne, to get in and grant those interim overshadowing controls as quickly as possible. On that note, I'll put the matter to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. I declare that carried unanimously. And I'll now call on Acting Lord Mayor Aaron Wood to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the major projects and major events portfolio.
Thanks, Councillor Rees. There's one report from management for consideration under the major projects and major events portfolio. That's agenda item 6.4, the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program Update. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? If not, I'm happy to move the recommendation on screen, and I call for a seconder. Councillor Leppett. So it's been a bit of an interesting time. 5 years of work, many tens of decisions on the Queen Victoria Market project. Unfortunately, received Heritage Victoria's determination not to grant us a permit for the dismantling, restoration, reconstruction of sheds A through D and the three-level basement. At the time, we only received two lines of refusal on that, and it was quite a blanket refusal. So, of course, our only option there really appeared to be to appeal the decision. Subsequent to that, we received a 30-page report which had a range of issues highlighted. Some of those issues highlighted we think we can actually meet as part of the project, and it would have been great if we could have sat down in good faith with Heritage Victoria before they reached this kind of blanket decision and worked through those issues. And I just want to make the point that, you know, there's been probably some people from certain groups that have sort of, you know, said, oh, City of Melbourne's going out and sort of almost, you know, taking this sort of pig-headed bullying stance. But we're only in this position in the first place because we got a refusal from Heritage Victoria, which was quite blanket. We would have been more than happy to sit down if they were heading to a refusal. And in fact, approaches were made to Heritage Victoria to do exactly that. And sit down and work through the concerns that they had. And that is, I want to emphasise, that is the way that I wish it had been handled. That is the way that the administration wishes it had been handled. And that's the way that QVM management wishes it had been handled. So I really want to make that point, that at all steps we've put ourselves through a rigorous process, as we should, but we're always available to try and work through issues before they get to a blanket refusal like that. Subsequent to that, the 30-page report, as I said, identifies a number of issues which I think we can work through. The three options we had before us were to appeal to the Heritage Council to take this through the courts or to submit a new application. I'll say on a personal note that I still think there's very strong grounds for either an appeal or to go through a court process. But I'm absolutely outcomes focused on this. This is one package of works of 13. So with the budget announcement today and the endorsement of our draft budget, there's nearly $20 million that will be spent on Queen Victoria Market. So the idea that the project's on ice or it's on hold is a misrepresentation of where we're at, and certainly the announcement of the Munro site permit shows us getting on with that job. The business case, the two independent business cases by very reputable experts in this area were predicated on moving services and moving cars from the market floor area, if you like, below ground, or the other alternative would be to move them off-site, which wouldn't make the logistics of running the market work. And the whole business case was based on doubling the tradable floor area. So I think there are some fundamental parts of our proposal which I think we should stand strongly behind as we move through the application process. There are other parts which I think we can easily accommodate and show good faith with Heritage Victoria and rebuild that working relationship. So the way I see this isn't, as probably some have said, that it's back to the drawing board, it's a complete redesign. This is actually about saying, You know, of the 30 things, for example, that Herald Victoria have identified, perhaps 10, 20 of those are easily accommodated without fundamental change to the project. And then there might be 5 or 10 things which we say the business case stacks up, here's all the reasons why, and we want to have a good conversation with Heritage Victoria on how we might address the concerns that they legitimately have. We've got to be very careful, though, that unpicking one part of the proposal, for example, let's move all the car parking to another site. You immediately then can upset a whole another host of traders who are saying that we need that parking below Queen Victoria Market because they pop up into the heart of the market and they're going to spend money. If you move all the parking off-site, then I'm not for that. In the 5 years, and I'm sorry to be long-winded about this, but it's quite a big decision we're taking. In the 5 years, the two alternative proposals that have been put up are the building of a high-rise car park on the burial site, or the exhuming of the bodies, which are in the burial site, and returning them to their rightful owners. Both of those have many, many issues with them. You can't build a high-rise car park without disturbing the burial site. It just can't be done. What's more, to have a high-rise car park on what will be 1.5 hectares of open space is something that I'm fundamentally opposed to. If it comes to exhuming the bodies and returning to their rightful owners, again, I'm not sure if there's a great understanding of what has happened beneath that ground, and I think the most respectful thing that we can do is to introduce a wonderful new open space and to acknowledge in written form interpretation about what has happened on that site. That would be the most wonderful outcome in my view. In terms of the one package of works which is the subject of the Heritage Victoria decision, we will work through this new application process in good faith. I'm acutely aware that we have a new Lord Mayor that will be about to join us who may have views. This will allow an accommodation of those views on the project as well. But depending on the outcome of the election, and I'm certainly not going to make any calls here tonight, that two elections have been held on the Queen Victoria Market. The first election held on the Queen Victoria Market endorsed a candidate who wanted to see the renewal occur. If a second election endorses a candidate who supports the Queen Victoria Market, then I think that we have to sort of stop saying that this should be a referendum, that we need a vote on this. I think that two strong votes are really important. That's notwithstanding the fact that we can work through a lot of these issues in much better faith, that we can do much better on the narrative of why this is important, work much more closely with traders, with customers to get this right. But I think the fundamentals of our proposal, consulted with over 7,000 different parties over the 5 years, and looking at the business case, I'm still extremely supportive of many, many aspects of that original proposal. The one that I've been pretty vocal about, skills in heritage restoration are everywhere. The Star of the Sea Church just down the road underwent a huge restoration. Parts of it were replaced that were no longer able to be restored. Heritage restoration is an entire industry globally. And in fact, more specifically, many of the open air markets around the world have gone through similar restorations. The Borough Market, the Barcelona Market, which Councillor Pinder visited, this is not a skill set that is in short supply. And so I still firmly believe that even with the Heritage Victoria decision, that we should enter into a in good faith conversation with them about how we still might be able to proceed with what I think is fundamental to the business case for renewal. So with that, I reluctantly support the position to submit a new application, not because I don't think that our proposal was absolutely first rate, but because I'm interested in the outcome, not in picking a fight with a statutory authority, spending ratepayer resources, and potentially not reaching the outcome that we desire anyway. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. As is apparent from what you just said, there are many different parts to this debate, and I certainly support the recommendation before us, largely on similar reasons, and maybe some of my conclusions are different to yours, but I'm very happy to land in the exact same place. and that is if that the options are one, appeal, two, seek judicial review, C, come up with a new application, then C is the option for me here and now. That will come as no surprise to anyone. That's what I said loudly during the Lord Mayoral campaign, and it's something that I'm going to support here. It does frustrate me when we have recommendations before us to note decisions that management are going to take. If we've got a proposal before council or the future Melbourne committee, the governing body should be deciding what action to take, not just noting what action management proposes to take. This is a very significant decision, and if I was writing the recommendation or if I had a bit more time to quibble with the words, perhaps we'd be resolving ourselves not to appeal and to lodge a new application. It's something that I've seen creep up a little bit recently, but be under no illusions that what we're doing here today as a council, as the Future Melbourne Committee, is effectively resolving not to appeal the decision. And that is because the deadline for the decision is the 25th of May. It was 60 days after the Heritage Victoria decision was handed down. And that as well is the reason for the timing of the report. I know that there's been a lot of speculation in the media as to why this proposal is before us today and not after a new Lord Mayor has been sworn in, and that is simply because the new Lord Mayor will be sworn in a day before the deadline for lodging of an application, and there's no way of holding a council meeting at that particular time. So that is reason enough for us to be considering the matter today, and it is appropriate, but I understand why there would be some concern in the community and some commentary in the media as to whether or not that is appropriate. But I think that that is the overarching reason why, and so I'm happy with the timing, difficult though it is. I agree with the Acting Lord Mayor that we need a park over where the Newmarket Square is proposed to be, over the current cemetery, and that the McNab proposal is simply not feasible and would never pass the building code. It's something that we're going to have to keep explaining time and time again, but it is not possible to build a multi-storey car park on that site with a few pylons that somehow magically don't touch any of the bodies. It is not an option. The options available to us now are not clear just yet. We're not commissioning here a particular style of new application. There are lots of opportunities with the car parking, and I note that it would be a relatively simple thing to amend the now granted Munro permit to add 207 or whatever it is car parks by way of amending that proposal. That is one of the options. I'm not going to start speculating what they all are here and now, but the upshot of the decision we're making here is that we're going to go through a new application. We don't yet know what that is. We're just not going to appeal the decision. I think that, like the Acting Lord Mayor said, there are grounds of appeal. The overarching reason why I don't support that is that I think that now is a very, very good opportunity for the council to demonstrate and try and get back on track any lack of trust that there might be in a section of the traders and in a section of the community. And I'm not going to acknowledge or admit that it's a majority concern, because there are so many different voices and so many different interests involved in our Queen Victoria market that it is not possible to say it's a simple matter of are you for it or are you against it. As is often reminded, this is 13 different construction proposals that make up the renewal. This is but one of them, and that's often not respected, and often not when you're going for the quickest and sharpest line in a Lord Mayoral election campaign, for example. But I am going to support this because even though we don't know what the new application might be, I support not appealing the decision, and I support demonstrating to the community and the traders that the process we have to undertake now is one of consultation again, genuine listening to concerns again, and demonstrating that we are doing the right thing by everyone, challenging and intricate though that might be. We should look at this as just as much of an opportunity as it is a roadblock from Heritage Victoria or anything else. I'm quite positive about where this could take us, so I'm happy to support the motion.
Thanks, Councillor Leppard. Any speakers against? Councillor Lee Lu.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. And I think both yourself and Councillor Leppard has been very kind in I guess, how we dealt. And look, this is purely, my frustration at Heritage Victoria and the process in which they came about. You know, sometimes you just got to, take a flag and put it in the sand and just go, this is what I stand for, and I'm going to, make a stand right here. The reason we have a plan is because we want to give confidence and we want to go ahead and do the things we wanted to do. And like you said, we have countless elections, we've had countless business cases going for it, and the fact that, now the project is jeopardised, it's unnecessary cost to the ratepayers, and also the fact that we can't get on upgrading what is probably one of the prime attractions in Melbourne. I just personally... looking at how the decision was made and also the reason for it, it just seems to be the fact that, they didn't, how do we respect someone who does not really respect us, right? And for us, I think it's a point where we need to make to Heritage Victoria. So I'm not in support of putting it in use of application. I think we have very, very high grounds to appeal or even ask for a judicial, and I think that's the process where we're going. And I foreshadow a motion, just in case if the original motion does not go forward, and that is changing a point 2, which asks management to appeal or ask for a judicial review of the decision made by Heritage Victoria's refusal of a permit for the dismantling, restoration and reconstruction of the western section of Sheds A and D and the construction of a 3-level basement plus mezzanine accommodating customer car parking, trader facility and operation areas to support the market.
Thanks, Councillor. So just to be clear, Councillors, we're debating the substantive motion as it stands, which is in support of a new application, and Councillor Lely has foreshadowed that should that be voted down, that he will then move a much stronger motion in terms of asking for an appeal or a judicial review. Thanks, Councillor. Any other speakers for this motion? Councillor Watts.
Yes, if I might just make a comment, I very much concur with Councillor Leppert's remarking on the way in which this recommendation is put to us, that we are to note. It seems we're doing much more than noting, we're actually supporting. I'm very much also needing to draw attention to 8.2, and I think listening to the commentary tonight, I think we have to make our position genuine, that we do wish to work with the Heritage Victoria, traders, customers and other key stakeholders to submit a revised proposal. If that's what we're voting on, that's what we should be intending to do. That should be our intention, and it's certainly mine to work that way. I think, and well, I certainly agree with Councillor Leppert, it is an opportunity to actually get this very necessary renewal on track. It isn't that the... and who wouldn't agree that we were actually very shocked by Heritage Victoria's position? But let's not kid ourselves. It wasn't smooth sailing. People were negative about the proposals which we put forward. It's a very good point now where we can actually get the community and all of the people I've just mentioned on side again and proceed with this very necessary renewal in whatever way we can, genuinely.
Any speakers against? Any other speakers for? Councillor Pinder.
I was just going to very quickly say that I think, listening to all the comments, I think we have to move forward, and the decision to submit a new proposal is a good one, and we need to work collaboratively with all stakeholders to get the outcome that the community deserves.
Councillor Riley.
I was speaking against the motion as it stands. I think we were dealt a really raw deal with Heritage Victoria. I think they just railroaded us into this without the consultation or the respect that they should have shown to the City of Melbourne. We were working alongside them right through until that last week when we were discovered without any other, fanfare that we haven't got we were going to lose the appeal. So to be fair, I believe we should fight it. And I understand what you've all said, that we should obviously take hold of all the stakeholders involved. But truly, you know, I still don't get it, why they couldn't consult with us before they came down with this listing. I just think it was totally unfair and unreasonable.
Thanks, Councillor Riley. Councillor Francis Gilley.
Yes, I will vote for it, but I completely agree with both of you. I think Heritage Victoria were unprofessional and unsupportive. I think we, you know, as you said, 5 years worth of work. I haven't been here that long, but you know, it was. I think it's really important that they know, you know, what they have done, and that and that actually we kind of are begrudgingly not taking a much more strident view and actually making a more legalistic view because of that treatment. However, I agree with everything that you have said before. We've got to get on with this. It does create an opportunity for new conversations, and we've got a great job to do, and we should do it as quickly as we can. This is probably the most expedient route. But I think if we were treated like this again, I certainly wouldn't be voting like this.
Councillor Rees.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I can sense a split vote coming on here, so I better put my position on the record, which is I understand the anger, the frustration of councillors about the Heritage Victoria decision. And I guess what you see before you in this recommendation is pragmatism writ large. And look, for me, pragmatism is my talisman on this matter. So I will be voting for it.
Thanks, Councillor Rees. Councillor Oak.
No, we are. I can sense where we're going, but I guess my view is a mixture of everyone's, that were in particular the points that were raised originally by Acting Lord Mayor, that this, you know, the view that we're paused and that we've down tools and we're not doing anything is not right. We've got a significant amount of work going on. I also agree with Councillor Leppard and Councillor Watts about this, that it is an opportunity, this pause, to not, I don't think it's not about reconsidering it completely. The issues are still the same. Already today we've heard from significant stakeholders about the issues that the market is facing, and none of them are different than what we heard 5 years ago, and none of them are different to the ones that we're trying to address and we will be addressing. And whilst the decision wasn't expected, you know, but it came to us through a statutory process, and so it is what it is, and we've heard it, and so I think 8.2 does allow us to revise our approach. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to, you know, that the proposal is any different, because I believe that the issues are on the table are very much the same, and we're going to end up in the same situation where we were 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, when it's about parking. It's about where the car parks are and how do we, you know, maintain the amazing market that it is right now in the face of the economic uncertainty, the business case that we have clearly in front of us about the significant issues that the market is facing. But, you know, underpinning all of that is the passion of all of us, of the board, the traders, the customers, our team that are working amazingly on this project. You know, underpinning all of that is that we have a desire to make sure that it is the Queen Victoria market of the future is the one that we love today, and that it is still there, and that really importantly, it's for the residents that are moving into the city that are going to be in greater numbers in the future, and that we're creating a legacy for them that we believe, you know, that we have today. So I'm still excited about it, and I mean, it is a small roadblock, I believe, and I don't doubt that we will get there. And I think that it does. I am focusing on the opportunity rather than negative.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. Any other speakers? At the risk of prolonging debate, because I know it's been a very big day, but this is a huge issue. You've heard the passion that my fellow councillors have spoken with. The words begrudging, pragmatism were used, and I'm in that same boat. I must admit that if it wasn't about finding not the path of least resistance, but finding the quickest way to keep the project on track, I would be voting with Councillor Leeloo and Councillor Riley. That's how much I stand behind the work that people like Rob Adams and Joe and so many others have done. The quality of work is excellent. It doesn't mean we've won the narrative. I absolutely accept that. But that's a different proposition than having a quality proposal that has become beholden to a lot of different voices working very hard to make sure it looks like the proposal isn't the best one. I think Councillor Oakes' points about this being a small roadblock is a really good one, and the fact that lots of work's already happening and the fact that this doesn't mean that we're going to come back with an entirely new proposal. It means a revised application. So it may mean that quite a lot of those kind of things that I personally see as fundamental are in the new application, but we work out a different way to go about them, to stage them, to show that they can be done, to provide the business case for them. And I said it's been a long night, so I don't want to go on too much, but there's a few other points that I want to make. Is that there was quite a bit of celebration from certain groups about the direction we're taking, and I found that that stuck in my throat a bit, because I've heard hands off our market, leave it as it is. What I am absolutely adamant about is that a lick of paint and a tidy up is not going to see this market here for the next 30 years, potentially not even the next 20 years. It's got so many great things going for it, but we know that the way people purchase is absolutely evolving, and it's evolving quickly. You've got Whole, you've got Lamana, you've got Coles and Woolies putting market-like displays in their supermarkets and competing. You've got Uber Eats, you've got a whole generation that hasn't grown up with the nostalgia of being a child and going to the market. And the fact that there's going to be 22,000 new residents immediately abutting what is actually a City North urban renewal area. The market is one very important part of it, but the 1.5 hectares of open space is for the 22,000 residents who are going to live there. It's not just for the Queen Victoria market. So I hope we stay the course. Five times in history, local governments have tried to renew the Queen Victoria market and they've been thwarted. I just hope that we stay the course as a council group. I think we've all made really good points. I agree that we need to renew our efforts about getting out there and hearing what's going on. I think the new CEO of Queen Victoria Market, Stanley Akos, in meeting with two-thirds of traders already, is doing a wonderful job. But I would just make the point that a few very loud voices, often don't represent the majority view, and that we've got to better sell what I think is a fantastic proposal to people like Rob, to Joe, to Foo, to all of our officers doing great work on this project. I personally, and I know many councillors, are absolutely right behind you, and we're determined to see this renewal through. I want to reiterate again, this is one package of works, 12 packages we will be proceeding with, and thank God we got the permit for the Munro site, because it means we can get on with protecting the market into the future. With that, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour, Councillor Louis, Councillor Francis Gilley, Councillor Watts, Councillor Pinder, Councillor Oak, Councillor Leppett, Councillor Rees, and myself. All those against, Councillor Riley and Councillor Leeloo, I declare that carried.
Acting Lord, can I request that my opposition to the motion be recorded in the minutes, referencing the motion I foreshadowed?
Yes. I now call on Councillor Oak to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the environment portfolio.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. There's one report from management for consideration under the environment portfolio, the draft Waste and Resource Recovery Strategy 2030. We won't call for a presentation on the agenda item, but I will call on our one speaker who has sat through the whole evening, but she's a committed South Bank resident, so she would have enjoyed it all, Artemis Patici, who's requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. And as you know, you've got 3 minutes.
Thank you, councillors, acting Lord Mayor, and remaining ladies and gentlemen. I'll keep it short. So starting with a really short story, especially since it was Melbourne Knowledge Week last week, where there were quite a few sessions around sustainability. And we got to hear from amazing companies and businesses and residents that are doing great work in reducing their own personal waste output and minimizing using virgin resources. But despite, you know, going through composting and reducing their use of plastic and packaging, there was one common frustration that was coming at the end of those sessions, which was, how can we do more? How can we tackle this problem on a bigger scale and get more businesses and residents on board? And the outcome was always, we need to get council involved, we need to get state regulators involved, federal, and so on. So it couldn't have been a more right moment where you hear about this draft to look at how we can minimize our waste and our use of virgin resources by 2030. Definitely want to see that happening before that, but we want to acknowledge the good work that went into this plan, and hopefully as a residents association we can provide useful input about how we can help reduce waste on a residential level, seeing how we're a densely populated suburb. We keep talking about livability about our city. It's at the point where we can't talk about livability without environmental goals and how we're reducing our waste and our use of virgin resources. So thank you very much. I hope you vote for it. Our city needs it.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Artemis? Thank you very much. I would like to move the resolution on the screen. A call for a seconder, Councillor Rees. Yep. As Deputy Chair of the Environment Portfolio, we are all very excited about waste. You'll be glad to know at the South Bank Residents Association. It's important it says draft. But a significant amount of work has gone into this document, and of course I'd like to acknowledge Martin at his last FMC committee meeting before he goes to Geelong. Obviously Jenny and Gordon, Melanie and the whole team, we are innovative and world-leading with respect to waste reduction, you know, alternatives to landfill, and this draft strategy and associated plan allows us to, you know, reconsider, you know, our ambition and raise our ambition. But bringing this draft at this point in time is really important. When we started writing this, you know, the war on waste had been on TV, and we started thinking about what is the city doing with respect to single-use waste. And, you know, we're looking at plastic bags, we're looking at, you know, coffee cups, and that was certainly a great opportunity for not only Melbourne but obviously all of Australia to think about how are we managing waste. And then, you know, only recently we've got the recycling crisis. So it's another significant opportunity that not only Melbourne but all of Australia is contemplating what are we actually doing locally to manage our recycling, etc. So it was a great opportunity to down tools almost and go out for further consultation, lift the discussion or raise the focus to the City of Melbourne level through some discussion papers, get some thought leaders, bring in Artemis to, you know, great to bring the excitement from our residents groups and our, you know, the good to know that there are people in the community ready to drive us and push us to be as ambitious as possible. And it was great to see you at the Knowledge Week event on waste last week. Yeah, I think that I don't really want to comment on what's in the draft. I think that it set some guidance on where policies could be, you know, revised or increased or added, especially around, you know, what are we going to do about alternative waste and the big discussions going on around recycling. I think that I'm looking forward to the ideas within the notes in the report around how do we bring in the community to talk about how we do respond more than what's in the plan. And one of those discussions will be led by Councillor Riley with her newfound interest in from the war on waste to, you know, what is the role that the retail and hospitality sector can play? And I think that is a critical conversation and a critical stakeholder group to get us to where we need to be with reducing waste and finding alternatives to the, you know, the consumption that we have in the city. So I really thank Councillor Riley for her work and her interest in this area, and I know that the retail forum will be greater because of your involvement, so I thank you for that. Yes, that's right, exactly. So I really, you know, I think that's an important conversation we have before we deliver the final strategy, because we need to get more and more engagement with the stakeholders who we expect to actually do the heavy lifting around a lot of this. So I endorse the draft, and I look forward to the final final report that comes back to us for endorsement. Councillor Rees, the seconder.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. I have that's a very accurate and passionate summation of what we're doing with this strategy, and I simply have one point to add, and that is to acknowledge your energy and efforts in this portfolio. I am your deputy, and it's been terrific to serve alongside you and to learn about this area, and I pay tribute to your energy, drive and passion in this field, which is really helping shape up what is going to be an excellent policy, and we look forward to the next round.
Oh, and I'm the chair. Are there anyone else like to speak to the motion? Councillor Watts, I see you're ready.
Yes, I am ready. I was delighted to see so much enthusiasm around waste and how we deal with it during Knowledge Week. And I see that it's very important that there were quite a lot of young people at Knowledge Week coming to our various sessions. And what I think that is perhaps one aspect we should consider very clearly, how we engage the kids of this city. It's their future we're dealing with, of course, and I think there may well be contributions to this draft from people considering how the really young people can start. I've just come back from Indonesia, where I see the government there is pushing the younger cohort. I very much see this draft as an opportunity to encourage participation in this very vexed problem that we're all facing, and this is a very good thing to do. And I'm very pleased to support it.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Are there any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Francis Gilley.
Just briefly, thank you for your leadership. Martin, thank you for your support and leadership of this. It's a great paper, great piece of work, and good luck.
Yes, feel free to, talk about... No, sorry. Were there any other councillors like to speak to the motion? No. Okay, I will put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hands. Pass unanimously. Thank you. Now call on Councillor Watts to assume the role of chair in the meeting in relation to the Knowledge City portfolio.
There's one report from management. And for consideration under the Knowledge City portfolio, would anybody... agenda item 6.6, proposed travel by me to the ICF Global Summit in London in June. Would any councillor like a presentation on this item?
Look forward to the report.
So, may I now call upon Chris Thrum to speak? Thank you. Chris is very well practised at this, so he would know that he has 3 minutes.
Thank you, Councillor Jackie Watts. Acting Lord Mayor, councillors, men and women of the Kulin Nation, or Melbourne Town. I support the recommendation from management that Councillor Jackie Watts travels to London for this important, intelligent forum. As we know, Jackie has done a lot of work, like sterling work in terms of like Knowledge Week and technology in the City of Melbourne. And the return on investment, I think, in the work that Jackie Watts is doing is like the work that NASA have done over the generations. It's like Carl Sagan said, it's a phenomenal return on investment. And I think it is appropriate that the acting Lord Mayor, councillors and City of Melbourne officers travel overseas to further the skills and knowledge base of the City of Melbourne. By doing so, they make Melbourne a better, brighter place, a better place for ourselves and our children. And I'm sure that Jackie Watts will have a great time with a couple of the presentations that she has to make, and she'll provide tremendous information when she comes back after her journey to London. So in conclusion, thank you, Jackie, for all the work that you're doing, and we'll hope to have great news from you when you come back from London.
Thank you, Chris. So I call on a councillor to move the motion.
I'm happy to
second it. I'll second it. Thank you. Councillor Oak?
I concur with Chris Thrum's summation that you couldn't get a better advocate for the knowledge economy and the knowledge sector and the knowledge opportunities in the City of Melbourne than Councillor Watts. And I can only imagine that you will spend your short time in London not only talking up our absolutely credentials of winning last year's Intelligent Community of the Year award, but also providing, you know, creating networks and opportunities that will you'll bring back into next year's Knowledge Week, which I should take this opportunity to congratulate you and obviously Michelle and the team and Bonnie and Brendan and everyone involved, because Knowledge Week was so successful and so exciting. I spent so much time at that hub just having meetings because it was great space to be involved in. And so congratulations to you and to the team for Knowledge Week. But I will look forward to your report from all that you bring back.
Thank you. The seconder, Susan.
I too acknowledge that this is a great opportunity for the city to learn more about the Global Summit. And I noted that it had 145 member cities, which is quite extraordinary. So you've got a lot of learnings to come back with. I look forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other speakers to this motion? No? Would the mover like to say anything else? No? Goody? Okay. I put this motion to the vote right now. So the vote is unanimous. Thank you.
And I'll take over because we've deferred a few items that it won't work out in terms of your scripting. So we're back to the finance and governance portfolio because of those deferred items. There are two reports from management for consideration under the finance and governance portfolio. The first one's agenda item 6.10, and that's the allocation of discretionary fund, third quarter 2017-18.
I move it.
I'm assuming councillors won't want a presentation. A call for a mover. It's Councillor Oak, and a seconder, Councillor Pinder. Councillor Oak. Councillor Pinder. Any other speakers? I put that to the vote. I declare it candidate carried unanimously. Well done. Agenda item 6.11 is the 2017-18 third quarter year-to-date financial performance report. And I'm sorry, councillors, but I will get our CFO, Fu, just to give us a quick report on that report.
Good evening, Acting Lord Mayor and councillors. And thank you, Acting Lord Mayor, for the opportunity to present. I'm conscious that councillors of the number of items you've considered this evening, so I will be brief in my comments. Essentially, this report before you this evening is for the committee to consider its the council's quarterly result for the 9 months ending the 31st of March 2018. And what you'll see in the report is a couple of things. Firstly, the council is ahead of its budget. It's in a strong financial position and well positioned to deliver on its full year result. In the interest of time, I won't go through all the revenue and expense variances, but essentially, when you look at those variances, there are some timing differences. And if you allow or exclude those timing differences to remove the noise, what I'm expecting is that the council will deliver on its full year underlying surplus of $2 million. On that note, I recommend the report for the committee's consideration.
Thanks, Fu. Any questions for Fu? No, thank you very much, Fu. I'm happy to move the recommendation on screen. I call for a seconder. Councillor Lee Lu, thank you. I won't go on too much. Fu, thank you for that update. Just to note, obviously, the most significant variances, grants received, $5.4 million favourable, largely due to the grants for the security measures, which we're implementing in partnership with the state government across nine sites. And obviously, it has already been reported around the legal costs of $1.9 million as to what the composition of that is. I don't intend to enlarge upon that any further than has already been reported. But overall, to deliver on budget, this is a good report, and thanks, Foo, for your discipline and your work as always. Councillor Leeloo. Any other speakers to this item? I'll put that to the vote. And all those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. This concludes reports from management to be considered. There is one item of general business to be considered, and that's agenda item 7.1, the notice of motion from Councillor Cathy Oak, nomination for the position of ICLEI First Vice President, and I call on Councillor Oak to move the motion.
I'm so delirious right now, but I would like to move the motion on the screen.
And I'm happy to second that. Councillor Oak.
It is what it is. Voting opens tomorrow. I'd like to think that this, if I'm successful, it acknowledges my significant amount of work for ICLEI, and they will not get a greater, you know, server for, you know, promoting the role that city networks play across the world in highlighting not only the role that cities play in sustainability, resilience, but also the knowledge exchange that it provides to our city and others is incredibly important. But we'll see how we go. I'm up against some, you know, mayors and stuff, so we'll see how we go.
I'll speak very briefly too. I think you'll give it an absolute good shot, Councillor Oak. I was very happy on behalf of fellow councillors to provide a letter of endorsement for Councillor Oak's nomination. You will not get a harder worker than Councillor Oak with such long and sustained commitment to this sector. And she's damn well done lots of voluntary positions as part of this work, so she deserves the nomination. We look forward to calling you Vice President after this process. Any other speakers to this item? Councillor Leeloo.
And if Councillor Oak does not get elected as Vice President, I'm sure we can nominate her President for in future years.
Any other speakers? If not, Councillor Watts.
Just to commend Cathy for her efforts, and I agree totally with Councillor Leeloo. There's always next year.
Okay, so it's Cathy for Prez. We'll work on the badges. Any other speakers? If not, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? I declare that carried unanimously. Are there any other items of general business?
Yes, Acting Lord Mayor. I'd like to move that we receive the petition titled Designation of Dog Off-Leash Status for Riverside Park, Kensington. And just by way of explanation rather than debate, I can note that in accordance with the Meeting Procedures Code, it is neither defamatory nor derogatory. It's a petition that will need to be responded to by way of report or briefing paper from the CEO, but I don't intend to discuss it here. I just propose we receive it. Thank you.
I'm happy to second that, and I'll put that to the vote that we receive this petition, and I declare that carried unanimously. Are there any items of proposed urgent business? I'm going to speak on something. Yeah. So do you have an item of urgent business? Okay. I'm speaking on something which is probably not what you may be speaking on because I'm not reading the signals here. Before I go to public questions, we always have our public questions at the end. I just want to take the time because Martin may have just sat through too much and public questions may just send him over the edge. I just want to acknowledge Martin Cutter for his excellent work at the City of Melbourne over many years. I know that councillors have absolutely all said that they've loved working with you. We wish Geelong all the best. We're sad to lose you. On a personal note, I've always valued your work ethic, the fact that you understand how this organisation works and understand the role that we play. Sometimes we can be a little bit annoying, but the fact that we can have robust conversations and that you state your position, but you also try and understand others. So we wish you absolutely all the best in Geelong and don't be a stranger and their win is our loss. So just a round of applause for Martin. the light beers are on Martin at his farewell. So we'll go to a 15-minute period.
Can I raise my urgent motion now, please?
You can, Councillor Oak. I'm not sure if this is...
I believe I texted it through to Councillor Business.
Okay, look out.
I would like to
raise that the acknowledgement of the Acting Lord and Mayor this evening meets the criteria for consideration as an item of urgent business.
Is there a seconder for this? Councillor Riley? Councillor Oak, would you risk to move a
yeah,
motion?
I would like to thank Councillor...
Sorry, let's put that to the... Yeah. It is sorry, I'm a little bit thrown by this. It's very much snuck on me and I'm already going bright red. So I'll put that to the vote that it meets the criteria. All those in favour, I'll declare that carried unanimously. Councillor Oak.
I'd like to move the motion on the screen to thank Councillor Wood for his role as Acting Lord Mayor over the last 5 months.
Is there a seconder for this wonderful, wonderful motion?
All of us.
Councillor Pinder. Yeah. Councillor Oak.
I know it's long, but it is, I believe, your last... meeting.
Not that I'm counting.
As Acting Lord Mayor, and you know, we're not making light of, obviously it's been a significant amount of time and 5 months of a lot of, you know, a lot of soul searching and stress and obviously a lot of work over the last 5 months, and you have been exemplary, and I would like to acknowledge that. So, and I'm sure others will like to speak, so I won't speak any longer, but I think it's incredibly important that we acknowledge the role that you've played in basically acting Lord Mayor and Deputy Lord Mayor over the last 5 months.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. It's very weird cheering your own thanks, but I'm kind of enjoying it. So, Councillor Pinder.
You know, I only say nice things about you. No, I think all of that is so relevant. I think you've not only been successful, Aaron, but you've been strident and you've been so savvy, as you've just blown me away from everything that you've garnered, all the knowledge, and so very quickly. And you, as a counsellor, you just took us all along with you. And I think that was just the most beautiful thing. So thank you. And I will miss not having you as Acting Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Councillor Pinder. I'm in danger of shedding tears here, so it's not very manly. Any other speakers to this item? Councillor Lee Lu.
I think respect is where, you know, you got to give respect to people who have done great, tremendous work, not only to us, but also to the people of Melbourne. You know, we were in a very dark place, and in terms of leadership, you know, it was something that was thrown to you, and I think it's, you know, I'm sure I know, you know, the sacrifice your family would have made, and also the fact that yourself, not only, you know, personally, but also, you know, your business would have had to suffer. But the fact that you took it on so willingly, and the fact that you were so willing to work with the rest of us, councillors who might not particularly have, I guess, you know, factions or anything like that, but new councillors. Is, you know, it's tremendous. You know, we had that private conversation, you know, well, where I've made my, you know, I give respect where it's due, and it's, you've duly deserved it.
So, Lou, any other speakers to this item? If not, I'll put it to the vote, which is very strange. I declare that carried unanimously, and thank my fellow councillors for that lovely touch. That's really nice. I'll respond when I gather myself. We now go to questions. Are there any questions? Shane Scanlon.
My public question is to Mr. Cutter. Would you like to share with the group what you're going to miss most about Melbourne?
Unaccustomed as I am to public speaking. It's actually a very good question, Shane. I probably haven't given it much thought. Look, I think, you know, we underestimate, and I said this last night, we went out to dinner, I think we underestimate how great Melbourne is and how much a joy it is for us to work with a product, and I call Melbourne a product, where you walk out the front door every day and the work that we do makes a difference to people's lives. We don't always have everyone agree with what we do, but we certainly do it with the best and greatest intentions to make Melbourne great and make Melbourne a fantastic place to live. So really, I'm going to miss, I guess, Melbourne itself. I am looking forward to giving my best for another city. And look, a strong Geelong is also means a strong Melbourne. We will work in great partnership together. So that would be the main things. I think from a Docklands point of view, as I was saying, you and I have had a long association with that area. I mean, I was involved first off when I joined the City of Melbourne in 2004 with the transition away from where it was into the City of Melbourne. I think we did a great job in doing that, and I think we've seen it grow, and I've been a firm believer in Docklands all the years. It will get there. It's getting there now, and I look forward to seeing it in 10, 15, 20 years' time where we're all incredibly proud of how it works and how it operates, and it will be a sensational place. So, and your effort in Docklands News isn't always appreciated, but it also it is always testing it. It's also a necessary thing that we need to have down there. So, all right, that's all I'm going to say.
Thanks, Martin. Well done again. So I think that's an excellent note to finish my last meeting as Acting Lord Mayor. I want to again, Cathy, thank you so much, and fellow councillors for your words, but more importantly, I think, for your willingness to work so well together as a team when we really needed it has made my job easy in that sense, that you've come willing to work together, and I think that's a credit to us as a group. So thank you very much. I'm now counting down the days until I can hand it over to the new Lord Mayor and say, hey, there's a few issues that you need to sort out. So again, congratulations to Martin, and I declare the meeting closed. I think let me thank public management and all of those in attendance first, and declare the meeting closed at 8:17 p.m.